everybody. This is William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up. Normally your source for Friday streaming conservative talk, but I was not feeling well yesterday, so we are taping this. But this is an important episode because we are going to talk about Trump's tariffs. I had not planned on having this conversation. I'm like, it's a deep conversation. It's a heavy conversation until I started watching Republican who lean libertarian, libertarians, the opposition, meaning Democrats, socialists, progressives. And they weren't lying, but they were fear-mongering, and they were only giving you one side of what's happening. They weren't talking about, did you know Trump has done this before the first time around? You know, did you know that we may or may not be on the verge of another economic collapse at the rate we're going with all our debt? Did you know the stock market, 50% of it is the top 10% dominate 88% of the stock market. The bottom 50%, working class and the poor, are in debt. Did you know that wasn't the case when Trump did this in 2018 and the working wage man, his household worth was rising faster than his bosses, the suits? So there's, and I'm not saying that, hey, Trump is right, these tariffs are going to work. Everything is a calculated risk. My previous company was one of the top three in the fantasy sports industry. And some of the people who were jealous or envious, well, he just got lucky. No. I would explain to my friends who would ask, or when I was giving the speech to try to teach some wisdom, life is about calculated risk. Michael Dell took a calculated risk before he left that freshman dorm to start Dell Computers. And I have a whole plethora. So there's a whole wide range. And I'd like to tell you this is going to be a 60-minute piece, but it may end up being 90 minutes. There's not going to be any hot takes, anything of that nature. We are just going to bring this to you in layman terms as to what's happening, why it's happening, and what are some of the expectations we can expect versus the doom and gloom that you're hearing from people who have TDS, people who hate Trump, and people who have been taught and brought up to think tariff bad, without understanding, yes, tariffs are bad if you have high tax rates and you have tariffs coming in and you're not doing anything to help the American constituent. That will be bad. So, but that's not the case here, and we're here to break it down with you. I'm being joined here by my good friend and co-host, the G-Man. Yeah, looking much sharper. When G first jumped on the camera this morning, he looked like he just left a frat party at 3 a.m. Yeah. He had that wake up look.
That's
on the rest
how
coast.
I felt.
I know that feeling, brother. I know that feeling. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Hanging in there. Well, first of all, G was on vacation here for what was it? At least 10 days. How
spring
was
break.
It? What was it?
We were in Vegas, and it doesn't have to stay there because I'm a family guy, so we didn't do much of anything other than circus arcade, and wanted to do Pop Stroke, but didn't do that. I went to Fremont. I mean, it's just family friendly stuff.
Circus is still there. They haven't blown that one up.
Yeah.
Man, I remember.
Like, you know, I used to go there when I was 12 years old. Still there.
Yeah. In my industry, the fantasy sports industry, before I sold the company and left it, when it first started, the trade seminars, everybody was poor. So we always went to Treasure Island, Circus, the Tropicana, you know, all the lower end ones. And then something happened. We got corrupt. We got corrupted. The investment bankers invested into daily fantasy. All of a sudden, the people who were running the trade association, they weren't illegally bought off, but they were legally bought off, meaning because they were trying to push daily fantasy and get that. They wanted the trade association to normalize it, say, this is okay, it's not gambling. So, for example, somebody who got 50 people on their webpage, if they were part of that trade association, they were being paid $50,000 for advertising. No, you see what I'm saying? It's like, ain't nobody seeing that, but they were being paid off. And to this day, I'm still one of the few who, and that's gambling. I think you put a gun in my head, boom, that is gambling. Daily fantasy is gambling. And you know what just came out? A CBS special talking about the gambling part of it. And that's where me and libertarians, like my partner Big John, we completely digress. Because what's people's choice? And I'm like, well, brother, that's why you libertarians suck. We'll never hold office. We'll never amount to anything as a political group because you can't see the big picture. I mean, they're okay with a druggie, a meth head busting into your house. You know, well, it's his choice, yeah. So now you're forcing me to blow him away because you think it's his choice to be a meth head. You know, so of course I'm being very extremist, but I was in the minority because everybody wanted their piece of the pie. You know, their cut of that pie. And I'm like, this is gambling. This is – but we saw that coming, G. When we first got our carve out, we all said gambling is going to figure a way into this industry. And I'm digressing quite a bit, but in a way – that's what's happening right now with our what kind of policy would this be? Domestic policy? The tariffs. That's what tariffs are a gamble.
Yes, economic policy. Yeah, global, domestic. Yeah.
So let me ask you this, G, before we get hot and heavy into the topic itself. What are your thoughts on the tariffs? First of all, pre-happening. And then when you saw that stock market fall 2,200 points, which I admit I had not envisioned it to fall that drastically, but I knew it was going to fall deeply. But at 2,200, I was like, whoa, okay, yeah.
Well, I mean, we're going to get into a lot of this here, so I'll just keep it simple with an analogy. When you go in to buy a car, you're not expecting the salesman from across the table from you to say, oh, I'll give you the lowest offer possible. I'll give you... you know, 10,000 off of invoice, and you sit there and go, wow, okay, this is a great deal, because what you're going to do is negotiate even further, assuming there's probably a lower price point that he will accept as well, and all of a sudden you think that he's desperate. But no, you expect him to put out some price way over MSRP because you know he's going to accept under MSRP. So that's what's going on right now. Trump is the car salesman who's trying to sell a policy to the rest of the world that's, you know, in our best interest. So he's going to put out something that's obscenely high, and now there's room for negotiation. And hopefully we all land at zero, or at least the ones that matter, we land at zero, because that's the best policy for everyone who's into free trade, but everyone believes in fair trade as well. And, you know, you and I and Big John have had this conversation on previous podcasts before. We want free trade, but I want fair trade.
You know, you bring up a good point here. And to the audience, we still haven't even started our podcast. It's just some general talk here. But that's what irks me about my good friend, Big John, is and Democrats and progressives. They use the free trade as the free trade. Trump putting tariffs is not free trade. But you hit it on the head. We don't have free trade. If we had no tariffs... and that's libertarians would be hypocrites. The Democrats would be hypocrites. The establishment against Trump would be hypocrites because China and Japan, they have low tariff rates on our products, but they purposely have it so the red tape, the fees, the regulations, they purposely make it difficult so the companies don't get their products in the States. Whereas there are other products like the European Union with some products is like nearly 40% the tariff rate. There's some products in Canada that are at 255% the tariff rate. So we don't have free trade. So the audience, when somebody tells you we need free trade, Mr. Joe Blow, you say, Mrs. Aho, we don't have free trade, and you need to learn some of the numbers. In fact, you don't even need to learn numbers. Just say, why is Canada charging us over 200% with some products? Why can't we get products into Japan? Why can't we get products into Europe? And the reason we can't, and some of this is correct, because life's not fair and you have to protect your nation and its people and its economy. And we have destroyed everything from the left coast to the east coast because manufacturing left because we were greedy. We want everything cheap, regardless of that. But Japan, for example, knows if we allow American cars to come in on a free trade, our Japanese manufacturers will be out of business. So we can't allow that. That's why you don't see many American cars. There's a reason, G, Mercedes is top dog in Europe. And American cars are sniffing up their tush just trying to be able to get their cars in market because they're protecting their countries and their constituents. And we don't do that. And, gee, I think that's because of World War II. We were the superpower. We literally had to rebuild the war. We kind of and I don't say this in a negative way, but as an analogy, the Mideast at the time were still what the white man would have called savages, you know, and right. the corporations all went in there, hey, y'all know that's black gold you got, let's develop together. So the U.S. was literally building and shaping the world for right or wrong, you know. Now we're not that. I heard a libertarian once say, well, the U.S. is bullies with tariffs. Actually, no. I'm not going to call the rest of the world bullies as much as they've taken advantage of us. Your thoughts before we start digging into this?
No, what I will say is if you go to X and look up Bill Ackman, who's a really big hedge fund manager,
yep.
he recently, I believe it was Friday, April 4th, he posted an article by Warren Buffett. And this article was from 2003. And Warren Buffett back then said, this is a problem, our trade deficit is a huge problem, because to put it in layman's terms, imagine there's two islands and one island is producing a lot of goods and they're hardworking, thrifty people. And the other island he called Squanderville, right? So it's basically a bunch of people who are not working as hard and they're just buying stuff from the first island. And at some point they start to run out of money. So they start to borrow money and then they start to print money. And then at that point, the first island, Thrifty Island is what I believe Warren called it, said, we don't want your money anymore, but we will take part of your island. We want some of the land that you have. And so they started buying the land. Well, who's buying our land right now in America? China's been buying a lot of our land, right? Bill Gates, what's he been buying? He's been selling farmland. Microsoft stock to buy farmland. So you're right. So your point about after World War II, well, when the rest of the world's supply chains and factories have been blown up, or at least many of them, they came to America to fill the gap for at least several decades, and we were the powerhouse. Right, right. So now we've said, okay, well, wait a minute. We have a lot of money here. If you guys make it, then we could just buy from you. And yeah, that can work for a few decades, but that's not sustainable in the long run. So here's the other thing that we have to keep in mind. Like the powerhouse of capitalism, the free market, like the rest of the world doesn't really have that. I mean, even a lot of European countries, they're socialist countries, right? So they tax heavy their citizens, mm-hmm. which I would argue we're taxed heavy too. At least the higher income brackets are taxed heavy. And that really slows things down to a crawl. It's like molasses over there. So they're not the powerhouse that we are. How long can we stay that way if our tax rates go back up? I mean, we're not going to be able to. So thank God that Trump reduced our corporate tax rates down to 21% from, I believe it was 35. We were one of the highest. Now we're one of the lowest. And he's going to further decrease it to 15 if you build everything here in America, which I think would be a great thing, especially for a guy like me. I'm a one-man consulting company, so now my tax rate will go down to 15% because I manufacture everything here out of California.
Right, right. You know, people are talking about, I didn't vote for this. I have yet to see a conservative say, I did not vote for this, because Trump talked tariffs all the way back to his first term. But I want to show you something, G, and I'm going to pause every 10 seconds or so to get your thoughts on it. But this is who Trump has been his whole life. And here's my other issue I have with TDSers and progressives and establishment, is they denigrate Trump. He was given the money. Whether he was given $100 million or $10 million, whatever the number was, he turned that into what's $5 billion now. My take to these people is like, where's your billions? Well, okay, I'm being a bit harsh on you. Okay, you were given $10,000. Okay, where's your millions? You know, y'all still living in that little shack over there down the road, bitching about everybody else because you didn't have the business acumen he had. And this was Trump 40 years ago. When I heard this on Megyn Kelly, when fat Oprah was loved Oprah.
Criticizing U.S. foreign policy. What would you do differently, Donald?
Hold on.
Last year, criticizing U.S. foreign policy. What would you do differently, Donald?
I'd make our allies, forgetting about the enemies. The enemies you can't talk to so easily. I'd make our allies pay their fair share. We're a debtor nation. Something's going to happen over the next number of years with this country, because you can't keep going on losing $200 billion, and yet we let you pay.
Whew. Woo, the good old days, G. 40 years ago, $200 billion. We are at 36 trillion right now and change. So this, I mean, he's talking about it back then. Your quick thoughts on when Trump was looking dapper, more playboyish.
Yeah. Well, I still wouldn't hit that.
Neither would I, but women did. He had a big old wallet.
It was the money. It was the money. No, I mean, if you do the math, that's 150 times that debt. What he was talking about back then were 150 times more than that.
All right, so
that's just absolutely absurd.
Hold on 1 second, G.
Can come in and dump everything right into our markets and everything. It's not free trade. If you ever go to Japan right now and try to sell something, forget about it, Oprah. Just forget about it. It's almost impossible. They don't have laws against it. They just make it impossible.
Okay, so, G, I spoke on this in during our long intro there that, you know, they don't make it hard on tariff-wise, but they make it hard on the regs. We're going, this is Japan, an ally. Thoughts?
Well, I think what we are selling over there are iPhones. But again, a lot of that's made in China and then sold over in Japan. And a lot of those guys do have iPhones, but they also have Samsungs. So they're, you know, that's going to Korea. But you don't see Fords, GMs, and Cadillacs over there. They're buying their own cars. So absolutely. I believe that they put up these protectionist barriers to protect their own industries. And over there, what you said earlier, Mercedes is the car
Europe,
to buy
yeah.
in Europe, but even here it is, right? And especially because of the high price tag. Over there, a Ford costs as much as a Mercedes. And look, most Americans go, oh, he drives a Ford, as if it's a derogatory thing. But over in Japan, it's like, oh, wow, you can afford a Ford? That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And on another note, in Japan, Xbox has been for a generation now. They've been around for about 25 years. I think Big John told me 25 years is technically a generation. And they can't gain any headway. Now, granted, the PlayStation is a very powerful tool and all, but Japanese tariffs, the regs, the red tape, they purposely don't want American products not to succeed. And people, this isn't because they hate Americans. No, it's not the case. It's because they want to protect their country. That's why I always tell libertarians, free trade is the biggest joke and lie you purposely push because it makes you sound holier than Jesus. But it's a big lie, because if we truly had big trade, the United States would dominate the world, period. Us, and then eventually China, you know, because there's no barrier to our products. You know, right. We would have dominated when all the world opened up technologically if there had been pure free trade, and we would own the world. You know, but countries protect themselves. So I don't.
Well, let me bring up this one point, which he was talking about. Trump just said back in, you said this is 88, 89. He said we don't have free trade, which is true. And I believe we put up some tariffs that are still in effect today. And that was put up in the 70s, I believe. And one of them was tariffs on camcorders.
Yeah.
I believe that's correct. So, and I could be wrong on this, so, you know, don't crucify me if I don't get this completely right. But the reason why your DSLR cameras cannot record more than a few minutes of video is because there's tariffs on camcorders. So you can't call them camcorders, and so they have to reduce the feature set of that. Otherwise, they could have this all-in-one device, but it's because of those tariffs that are still in effect today, and they say, oh, we have no tariffs. But, no, we do have some tariffs. But, you know, in actuality, in the long run, tariffs are harmful to progress. But, again, if you don't have fair trade, you don't really have free trade. You know, whether it's bilateral or unilateral, what's best for progress is that everyone's tariffs go down to zero. And then we can have a free trade of everything, and we're not so protectionist. Because this would hurt us in the long run if everything goes into effect. Well, I don't know, again, like I said, this is a negotiating tactic.
Right. But, I mean, I just don't see free trade happening. China would, or Japan will be overrun by other products. It would be on quality, and that sounds nice on paper. Well, that's more quality. But we are cheap bastards as human beings, you know? No. So we are the worst. We will not pay $100 for something that will last 20 years, but we'll pay $20 for something that will last 2 years, not realizing we're going to be paying $2,000 when we could have had something that lasted longer. But, I mean, that's our thought process. This is human nature. It has nothing to do with being stupid or dumb. We just don't always think in the proper fashion. Why we're just wired that way. So this isn't anybody's fault. So I just don't see free trade. I think countries have a responsibility to protect them. But then there's also the ludicrous. There's also the sheer stupidity. And there's also, I guess, the unfairness of it. Meaning we could let more American cars and be more fair about it or Japan. But no, we don't have to. And they better keep their tariffs low so we can sell our cars. Well, what if they don't?
Going back to the car analogy, I would love it if the salesman sold me the car for half off, but I know it's not going to, but you know, I hope for that. And again, like 0% tariffs, that would be great, but realistically, that's not going to happen. There's going to be some amount of tariffs somewhere. I just hope this doesn't blow up into a full-on trade war, because that would not be good for anybody.
It won't. I mean, we can't say that for 100%, but we're going to talk about that. This wasn't in the script, but I came across it this morning as I was preparing for the show. And then for the audience, we were talking with Big John, our libertarian, sometime producer, and he was telling us that a lot of libertarians were duped. I'm like, no, they weren't. Trump has been saying this for over 4 years, said it on the campaign trail in 2015, said it on the campaign trail in 2020 when he's been campaigning for his reelection. So nobody was duped. And so I just felt this was a very important the show, because Trump's not, well, why is he doing this? Or I didn't vote for this. People who say that are mostly lying, because I, as a conservative, have yet to find any Republican or any independent to say, I didn't vote for this in person on social media, but I question those when they only have 5 followers. Yeah, I'm not sure I believe that guy. Have you found anybody, G, that has said, I did not vote for this?
No, not at all. I think everyone expected this, and, you know, if he was talking about it. I mean, Trump, everything he said last year, he's pretty much followed through on. So I knew that there would be, you know, tariff, what would you call it, negotiations and turbulence and all that. I expected that from the beginning. And
now, what you're saying is the pain. The pain. Now, we may not have expected how deep that pain could be, but it just started. So the pain you're feeling isn't truly pain yet. It's what they're fear-mongering you with. Let's keep going. Go ahead.
I will say one thing, that you remember in Trump's first term, he always talked about how the stock market's going up. Look at it. It's going up. Now he doesn't talk about it at all.
And the reason why
is because he knows it's going to go down. And I'll get into that a little more as we get into this. But I think he wants it to go down. And so he doesn't talk about it. And in fact, in all these interviews, he's like, oh, there's going to be some short-term pain, but we'll see what happens in the long run. It will be better than ever before. I'm not a good Trump impersonator.
You're a terrible Trump impersonator. All right, let's keep going here.
But I've got this thing down.
They come over here, they sell their cars, their VCRs, they knock the hell out of our companies. And, hey, I have tremendous respect for the Japanese people. I mean, you can respect somebody that's beating the hell out of you, but they are beating the hell out of this country.
All right, G, you already talked about that, so we're going to keep going here.
Yep.
Kuwait, they live like kings. The poorest person in Kuwait, they live like kings. And yet they're not paying. We make it possible for them to sell their oil. Why aren't they paying us 25% of what they're making? It's a joke.
And that's what I'm talking about, G. It's like they've taken advantage of the fact that we have low tariffs and they lock us out. And that goes to your point. And you said this many times over. It's about fairness. Hold on. Let's keep going here.
This sounds like political presidential talk to me. And I know people have talked to you about whether or not you want to run. Would you ever?
Probably not. But I...
Hold on one second, G. That's just funny, isn't it? Hello, everybody. We are back. We were just reviewing that video there to make sure that it was what we thought it was. And it was. It was about Trump talking about running for president. And it's ironic, G, we're going to get off topic here just for 30 seconds. And the audience didn't see it. And we didn't show it for copyright reasons. But he's like, would you run? No, I'm not thinking about running right now. But don't rule it out. And would you win? I'm not going to go into something to lose. So in a way, it was prophetic, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe he turned into a Democrat during George H.W. Bush's presidency and was a Democrat for at least 10 years there. So I found that very
Democrat
interesting.
Most of his time, he went independent only because he didn't see any openings in either party. And then when David Duke, see, this is what irks me about the people who call him racist. You know, when David Duke entered the Reform Party, he goes, I'm out. He goes, I'm out. You know, Trump, and you guys didn't see it, but he praised Jesse Jackson. Jesse Jackson, that was his first serious run. No, his second. I think he was one of these perennial, but he gained traction or tried to gain traction when Clinton first ran. Right around there, Jesse Jackson was a rising force. Martin Luther King had been assassinated, 10, 15 years earlier, and him and the senator, the mayor of Atlanta, they were filling their oats with political power. Mayor Andrews, in the proper way, to help Black America, Jesse Jackson, to enrich himself and become a rich man through his Rainbow Coalition. So yeah, I'm not a Jesse Jackson fan because he's played Black America. That's my opinion, not G. You know, and he's profited and done a lot. Now, he was a good man when he was attached to MLK. But once he got on his own, he loved the color of money. You know, and for the audience, what I'm referring to is Jesse Jackson used to go to corporations. If you don't sit there and donate to my Rainbow Coalition or whatever nonprofit he had early on, he would get all Black individuals, Americans, to picket, and then he would call the news sources, and it would, with only three sources of media, he'd get a lot of coverage. You know, so he was corrupt, him and Al Sharpton. But Andrew Young, I always liked Andrew Young until his last 10 years or so, you know, when he jumped on the Obama narrative. Anyway, we digress there. So let's get into this. Let's get into what I built around the show. But before I do that, any thoughts on overall what Trump said? I mean, he's been saying this since 1988, and he's believed it his whole life. And he said in 1988, you know, for the past 25 years. So that's 62 years now, just from Trump's calculation when he was an up-and-coming businessman. And it's been going on since the end of World War II. Any thoughts on Trump?
Well, at the time, I believe it was a year later, Japan went into a great deflationary cycle. I think the Nikkei reached its high. It has not been reached, or maybe has recently been reached back to that high. But now China's taken over as the subject of Trump's ire, which is true. I mean, China is buying all our bonds and you know, they're buying our farmland or some of our land. And so, you know, China's replaced what Japan used to be. And I think Trump is seeing that. I mean, for anyone to deny what's happening, they're just sticking their heads in the sand because of partisan reasons.
They deny it. And people, here's what makes it even worse. William, it's just coincidence they're buying all that land next to military bases. It reminds me of the early 80s when Russia was building their new embassy in D.C., and they had bought the land like atop this massive hill where all their communications array had perfect alignment to eavesdrop on everybody, you know. It's partisanship is going to destroy us. I'm a very partisan person right now only because I can't have a conversation with the other side. And I am an Alinskyite, self-taught person when I was liberal. So I have all those traits in me. So I treat them as they treat others. So I don't help the cause. But the moment they want to talk, I will talk. Because, gee, as you know, I put on a Democrat and slash Republican events, and I can do that. But if they want to fight fire with fire, and again, somebody once told me, well, then this is going to continue. So be it, until smarter heads get into power and they realize we can't continue on like this. But what angered me when that person said it is, oh, so you're okay if Democrats just keep doing it, and the rest of the country gets beaten up, and we become an authoritarian state. You're okay with that because you don't think both sides should be doing it. You see, that's what I'm talking about. People who want to put their two cents in but don't have a solution.
Yeah, and real quick on the China thing, I had a friend who worked for a defense contractor, and he was told by the HR and the, you know, people who take the clearances, don't talk about the work outside of this facility. Don't go to Starbucks. Don't do it. And he's like, what's the issue? Well, there are Chinese spies around the area. And they're sitting there at Starbucks and they look normal. Or they pull up in vans and they, you know, they take pictures and videos. And they said there's been documented cases of that. So if you don't think that they want to buy land so they can set up permanently, you're not taking the threat seriously.
Yeah. That's a whole topic unto itself.
Right.
And intel and espionage gathering. And I was on a spook ship, so I was part of that world indirectly. But hey, before we move on, I got to toss it out. Fang Fang. How much did Swalwell tell her? And because of partisan politics and the Republicans lacking cojones, he should have been stripped of everything intel. Yeah, he's still on the intel committee. You know, unless they just took him off recently. All right. So let's get into this, my friends. On April 2nd, 2025, a day that will live in infamy to the fearmongers, President Donald Trump unveiled two new tariff initiatives during his White House Rose Garden event dubbed Liberation Day. And the French are like, Viva! That's a World War II reference, people. But you kids were never taught that, so you don't know. Go look it up. The first tariff is a universal 10% duty, and that's G is applied to all U.S. imports. It's effective immediately with collections already begun 2 days ago. And supposedly, I think Scott Bessent, the Treasury, said it's already brought in like $30 million. You know? So the second involves reciprocal tariffs, or as G likes to talk about, this is fairness. Meaning you're going to hammer us, we're going to hammer you. And that's targeting approximately 60 countries. And that's set to take effect 4 days from now. So what's the purpose and rationale for this? Trump described Liberation Day as one of the most important days in American history because he believes, as you saw since 1988, we have trade imbalances. He's accused our trading partners, again, since 1988, of having looted, pillaged, and raped the U.S. economy for decades. Guys, I'm not a dumb idiot. I researched this, and I wholeheartedly agree. The reciprocal tariffs, G, they're designed to match the trade barriers these countries impose on U.S. exports. Not quite, but generally speaking, tip for that. He calculated, they have a formula they calculated. Most people don't like it or agree with it. My take is, I don't care. They came up with a number. You know, you want to quibble over tidbits, get into the minutiae of things. Those are just people who want to fearmonger it more. They're out there. But in essence, his plan, G, is to slap 10% on everything coming into the U.S., no matter where it's from, the flat fee. Then for countries he thinks are playing extra dirty with high tariffs on U.S. goods, he's adding these reciprocal tariffs on top. That's why Canada is so angry, is because they're one of the worst offenders. As you know, so it's a double whammy. A 10% is the baseline, and the reciprocal part is hits back harder, matching or countering whatever big fees these countries are charging us. I've said that three times because that is the gist of the heavy hand against them that you never hear from the media or the TDSers, progressives, libertarians, the rhinos, etc. They don't tell you we are being our country, our corporations are being taxed, not taxed, but tariff to the hill. So Trump's stance, G, his overall stance is he's fine with overseas manufacturing, keep costs low, profits high, but he's also pushing hard for a partial exodus back to the U.S. And G, he's been doing that since his first term. Remember he talked about. So right now, he talked about countries, you know, giving them the tax breaks to bring their tax money that they had overseas. He's worked hard because he knows middle America is dying with the loss of manufacturing. So he has a 54% plus a 10% tariff, say, for example, on China and others. Jacks up the price of staying there, which is he's trying to nudge companies like Apple or Nike. Hey, rethink your process. Come over here. Maybe have some factories in Vietnam. Maybe the bulk of them. We don't care. But bring some of your factories here, and you're not going to have 64% in tariffs. And that's nothing different than what other countries do. So if tariffs make China's $440 billion export game too expensive, Trump is betting U.S. firms will shift some of those plants stateside. And honestly, that's actually good business, you know, because when the pandemic hits, we don't have to worry about supply lines as we did when that first one. You have something that's built in. So it's enough to boost employment, and his motto right now is make America wealthy again. And we're going to talk about that wealth, but the reality check, it's partial, because a full exodus is not practical and could take generations to happen. China's scale and speed, to be quite honest, are unmatched. But that's what happens when you literally have slave labor. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. The NBA has all their, a good chunk of their gear is being built by the Uyghurs, the Muslim Uyghurs there, who pretty much are indentured servants. And they know this. So they have, when you ask the NBA about this, they refuse to comment on China. But Mark Cuban will tell you everything that's wrong with the U.S. while accepting slave labor for his products so he can increase his billionaire wealth. So yes, I'm sounding like a Democrat there, G, with that tack. But Trump's aiming for leverage. G pointed to this already in the first 30 minutes. He's trying to force countries, and I say China because that's the company, that country everybody loves to talk about, but they're not even the major player here. But they're an easy example to use. You're trying to force countries like China to negotiate while luring production back. Or maybe I said China because they have probably the most factories there. So the overall belief is Trump's fine with global supply chains, but wants a chunk of that action here. And tariffs are the stick to make it happen. Gee, any agreements, disagreements, your thoughts on what I just said?
No, I agree mostly. I do think that a part of the missing factor here is that at least before the Great Depression, the major way the federal government pulled in revenue was through tariffs and not through income tax, right? The income tax wasn't instituted until 1913 during our favorite president, Woodrow Wilson. Not. So at that point, I want to say it was still another 20 years, 20 to 25 years before income taxes overtook the tariff revenue, right?
Right.
So I think Trump wants to somehow lower income taxes, but you got to offset that because our federal spending is way too high, right? So I think what he wants to do, so the 10% across the board doesn't make sense to me, especially as a negotiating tactic, because let's say Colombia, right, sells us coffee beans. We can't grow coffee beans here. I mean, it is not – our soil, our climate is not good enough to – at least to grow good coffee beans. I'm sure we can Arabica is a good one. What's the other one? Robusto, which is like the really bad coffee beans. Maybe we could grow that, but nobody wants to drink that. So now our coffee prices are going to go up 10%. So that's not much of a negotiating tactic. What's Colombia going to buy from us or whatnot? So maybe it is, but I think what he wants to do is have a income tax reduction, an income tax rate reduction on us, and offset the tariffs with that, right? So if I'm buying a two pound bag of coffee from Costco for $15, now it's going to go up to $16.50. But now I'm making a little more money because my tax rate, which is not even being talked about right now, but I'm sure it will pass the Congress. The tax rate goes from whatever, 25% to 23%. So we make some, that's roughly 10% reduction in our taxes. So I believe that's what's happening here, because the 10%, the non-reciprocal, but the straight across the board tax rate or tariff rate doesn't make sense to me. Unless that's the goal.
Okay, so I have been in negotiations, not by choice. When you start a company, you in your small show, you learn a lot. And at the end of the day, you have a base rate. But the fact that they're not going to – that 10% all of a sudden looks attractive when they're looking at 34%, 50%. Their thought process mentally, let's get back down to that 10%. That's just it. And that's why he's doing it. Push comes to shove, he believes tariffs are a good thing. But he's willing to sit there and keep it low at 10%. And just as an example, China charges 6 to 7% tariff. What they do is they have 97% difficulty in getting your products there to the point you abandon that process, you know. So right. Let's get into Trump's playbook here, G, okay?
Yep.
Okay, so I want to go through Trump's playbook, G. So all of this is a renegotiation ploy. The first point I want to make, I want to give a quick overview of how this is likely going to work. We're going to take a quick hit, an early hit on tariffs. Now, this was done in the past, and you know what that early hit was early on, people? It was a 0.7% early hit. It was light on us. It shows that tariffs do sting, and it's enough to spook China, who took the 4% profit loss the first time around. And this is going into talk. Eventually, it does go up higher on us. But so far, early on, 9 countries, the moment Trump said, we're going to hit you with tariffs, these countries, no, Senor Trump, no, Senor Trump. That's my Latino accent, but I'm Latino, people. I can do that. Senor Trump. And so the 0.7% hit we took early on in 2018, and we're going to talk about this more in depth, but that was provided by Federal Reserve in 2022 and Reuters, you know. So 6% long-term is what we're looking at when it comes to about a 10% hit, meaning we will eat the cost. I think Scott Bessent, the treasurer, tried to sit there and say it was 2%, but my research showed we're looking at about 6%. Again, that's different from what the doom and naysayers, they're just going to put all those tariffs back on us. That's not true. China and other importers will eat chunks of that. Critics who say we're screwed, they're overselling it. MIT came out with a great article showing how that these hits aren't what the public says. And this is the education part. They count on you people not to be educated and to be scared. Emotion is a Democrat trademark that Republicans need to learn how to use, because they use it to gin up hate and fear. And that's politics since the dawn of civilization. So to conclude this general opening of how it's going to play out, tariffs, the hit is on us, but China will bleed too, as well other countries. And this is what G's talking about, the fact that we're going to have a small hit, they're going to take the brunt early on. This is what's going to force them to deal. That's the angle G's playing up. The angle everybody who hates Trump or is against this is we're doomed. So you have two different camps here. And so the numbers hold. We're going to get hit early on. We renegotiate, and that's what happens. And then we kind of back off on these heavy tariffs. So, before we get into Trump's playbook in the sense of his previous term, your early thoughts on what I stated. Because what I stated is documented, and you kind of agree with it. But what are your thoughts on that? Is anything to add to that, or maybe I said something wrong here?
No, not at all. I think there's a saying that everyone who's well-versed in economics, or even those who aren't well-versed, they've heard it before. When the United States sneezes, the world catches a cold, right? And that really goes to show how much our purchasing power really is magnified around the world, and everyone's relying on us. This goes back to the 1930s, right? It was our Great Depression that basically caused a collapse in European economies.
Worldwide Depression, 1929.
Right. So if you go to this, and what you were saying is absolutely correct, if even though it's a small percentage on our part, for them it's a huge percentage, and they know that. So they have two choices: either come to the table to prevent major damage to their economy, or fight us on it. I mean, I don't understand Canada's position on this. They have a 300% tariff on our milk. I'm talking milk. I mean, this is a necessity, right? And for most countries, milk is a necessity. Cheese. I mean, it creates so many goods out of just one little base product, milk. And they have a 300% to protect their own farmers, and they won't give that up. So now Trump's hitting them with these tariffs. I think they will come to the table because, I don't want to get too wonkish here, but 80% of Canada's exports comes to the United States. That's a huge number. So if now all of that's increased by price by 25%, Americans are going to say, well, I can do without that. Or, if it's material, they'll buy less of
it. Wisconsin eggs look better than Canadian eggs coming across the border.
Right.
Actually, so, that's the wrong analogy. I apologize, because our eggs are being priced over there. Yeah.
Right. Go ahead. I think, yeah, we will have some pain, but in the long run, if they come to the table, and notice the word if they come to the table, we have the bargaining chip, and that's what Trump wants to do.
And the problem is what people see to the audience are the fear mongers that are scaring you. Well, the reality is there's some truth to it. Like I said, nothing's guaranteed. And, oh, I haven't said that yet. We haven't gotten to that section. Nothing's guaranteed in life, people. But they're facing it even worse on their side. So the whole point is they're taking the hit early on. Countries are already talking, we're going to have to lay people off. We have to do this. We have to do that. So they have nothing to lose. They have everything to lose, actually. And I want to reference the bully aspect. People keep talking about, hey, we're being bullies. Who's truly the bully if they're charging our egg industry 300% tariff? You know, and we're not charging them over here. Who is really the bully? See, so again, it's another lie. It's a false narrative. You know, who truly is the uncompassionate person? It's the one who's fear-mongering, the one who's willing to keep 50% of Americans poor. You know, that's the ugly truth they don't tell you about. And why, if we're indoctrinated as kids now, we don't learn how to critically think and put it together. That's why G and I are here. All right. So Donald Trump has done this before. The big talk G is inflation. You know, am I in the right spot here? Yeah. I'm looking at my notes here. I don't want to skip because it's very important for you people to understand this. And inflation did not spike. Critics swore China tariffs would spike prices in 2018. Wrong. Inflation stayed about 2%, and it's backed up by the 2019-2020 BLS. The prices rose just 0.4% to 0.7%. We talked about that number. That was from the Feds in 2022. And I'm sourcing this because these are not lies. These is truth to counter them. And China took the 4 to 6% hit on that. And gee, working wages climbed. They said working folks would get slammed. Nope. Wages climbed 16% for low-end workers. Think your retail workers, your fast food workers, your factory workers working the floor. This was from 2017 to 2020. The EPI reported this. The job stayed strong at 160 million with 3.5% unemployment, the lowest. That was a 50-year low, and the BLS reported that in 2019, and they came out ahead, not hurting. Your thoughts on inflation and the working wage? Because, gee, they're saying the exact opposite is going to happen. You know, inflation is going to go up, working wages are going to go down. So your thoughts on the fact this did not happen the first go-around?
So inflation, I will say during – okay, so let's go back to Smoot-Hawley, which is 1930. Inflation didn't happen. It was deflation, even though these tariffs went up everywhere. The reason why is because the monetary supply collapsed, right? The M2, and I'm going to get too wonkish, but M2 is basically you print $1, you get 10, because I give it to you, and then you give it to someone else, you give it to someone else. So you get $10 out of every dollar you print. So why didn't inflation happen during Donald Trump's first term? Because we had control over our money supply, right?
Right. It didn't happen.
Right. So the Federal Reserve did not go into this massive printing spree. I mean, it was printing, but not massively. COVID happens. And what is – and I will say Trump did this too, but what has happened during – what happens during Biden's term? He starts handing out checks. And yeah, I believe Trump handed out one check. Biden handed out two. You're talking $1,500 each. So you're giving every family roughly $4,000. Multiply that by 10. Right. So, and I believe I saw this chart, the base money supply increased by 40%. So that's why inflation happened. On top of that, the supply chain disruptions.
You are wonky. I just want to put it in layman terms. So in essence, printing money created inflation. That was a loss of the monetary policy or controls, what you're talking about, correct?
Right. So now when you have supply chain disruptions and prices jump up because the number of items available for sale is low, but you have a lot of money out there. People go, I have a ton of money. I'll just pay the extra. I mean, people were buying Jeep Grand Cherokees for almost six figures. I mean, that's insane when they're going for, I believe it was like 55,000 before the pandemic. So But that's okay. They have all this money. So Tesla Ys were going for $65,000. I mean, right now they're being sold for $45,000. So that's why inflation happened. And so now I don't believe that's why it's going to happen again, because I think people will just say, look, the price is too high. I don't have as much money, which has been happening for at least a year. So this started with Biden. I don't have as much money as I used to, so I just won't buy that item from China, Japan, or wherever. So I don't believe inflation is going to happen this time.
Right, but they're trying to scare you with that. They're trying to scare you. And G said it well. It's the printing the money that created it after Trump left office. But Trump, to be fully transparent, he did give out the first check. Okay, so I said working wages climbed. This is what's important. The hourly workers did better than the bosses. The pay, the working wage for somebody who works hourly went up approximately 5% a year for we the grunts versus 3% for supervisors, your bosses, salary people, the suits. That was the first time in ages that had happened. That was it. See, and that's what you don't understand. That's a mark of what Trump was doing. He was changing our economy. All of a sudden, the working class, you, para mi Latinos, for you Indians. Well, Indians are smart. They're almost like that. Well, you guys are Asians, technically, aren't you? You know, they're part of the Asian crowd. They're smarter than you well. You know, but for us Latinos and us blacks, and I'm being facetious here. Is that the right word? I'm just joking.
But for the
poor, that meant we were actually seeing a jump in monetary gain. That's an extreme. I can't remember the last time that happened. And that's a changing of how our economy tends to work. The bottom 50%, that's us, saw wealth soar 40% from $1.1 trillion to $1.5 trillion, while the top 10%, they saw growth too, but only at 30%. So we are at 40%. They were technically at 28%. So what Trump was doing was actually helping the working class. Everything AOC tells you, everything Bernie tells you, they were lying about Trump. Trump was actually helping the working class. All they ever talk about is helping. And what's the Democrats' belief, America? They want to continue to subsidize you. You know, they act like we're losers. They got to help us. I saw this firsthand as a child growing up with the white suburban mom, how they looked at and how they treated my mom. I'm not blaming white suburban moms. Most of them wanted to help, but they had a superiority complex about them. That's how Democrats look at us, where Trump uplifted us. So the current system keeps them dependent, meaning us 50% work, the bottom 50%. And it's a lopsided system, G, and this is where I want you to come in. Right now, the bottom 50% own 0.4% of stocks, and yet we are in $3.3 trillion in debt. It's called credit card debt for the average Joe out there. You know, wages have lagged versus the productivity in 50 years. And see, Trump's pushing tariffs, tax cuts. The USMCA is $35 billion a year from China to fix all that. Put that in layman terms for us, G, please.
No, I think what this basically means is what was happening was working, right? So what Trump put into place would work. So he had the tax cuts. He increased the standard deduction. So that means when you increase the standard deduction, that's how much of your income is tax-free. So he increased that. He lowered the tax rates. And actually for the wealthy, even though the tax rates were lowered, the deductions, a lot of deductions were removed. So they essentially ended up paying the same dollars in taxes before the tax cut, or after the tax cuts than before. Then the tariffs were put into place. My thought when Biden got into office is all of this is going to be rolled away.
Yep.
And he didn't roll anything away. He kept it all in place. We still have the Trump 1 tax rates today. We still have the Trump 1 tariffs today. And Biden was in office for 4 years. So,
okay, for layman terms, the Trump 1 tariffs, how you will remember this, is the China tariffs are still right there from 2018, because that's what kept making the news. And what's important, right, before G, you go on, what's important for the audience to understand, they kept hammering Trump. He wants to put tariffs in place. He wants to put tariffs in place. He wants to put tariffs in place during the campaign. Yet they didn't tell you that Biden kept his tariff. Now, you heard that from Vance, from Ramaswamy, Elon, you know, all the, you heard it from the Republican side, but the mainstream media, Democrats, they weren't saying, well, you kept the tariff. I think it was one debate question. But the point is what G is saying in layman terms is we kept Trump's tariffs, most of them. All
right,
go
right.
on, my
and
man.
They had the White House, they had the House, and they had the Senate. They could have done anything they wanted, but they didn't. They kept it all in place because why? Because it worked. And so changing that would have, I don't know what they thought, okay, maybe it's working. Let's not break whatever's already in place. Now you come in with the money printing, the massive government spending, which both caused inflation. And so everyone has more money.
And taxes. They wanted to keep raising taxes as well,
right.
Which is the opposite
at least on the
formula. Yeah.
Right, yeah, at least on the top, which didn't pass because of Manchin. But they didn't want to raise taxes on the low income. But now, you know, you have to have recessions. And this is not a popular thing to say, but you have to have recessions. Recessions basically wring out of the towel the excesses, right?
Yeah.
So you have excess water and you need to wring it out every so often because it's way too wet. Well, so we had 2 months of recession during COVID. But before that, you had to go back to 2009, 2010 to look back at the last recession, which was deep, but it was actually pretty short. It was 6 months. So you're talking that we haven't had a real recession to wring out the excesses, where credit cards, basically that excess debt gets, you know, at the expense of bad credit, gets washed out. And then the stock market deflates. I mean, the stock market's way overpriced right now. So you know, you need a drop in the stock market so there's a reset of value and people can buy back in. I think, you know, this is long overdue. And I will say Trump won back in 2016-20, did not want the economy to drop during his first term so he could get reelected. I think at this time, he thinks it's a good thing. I honestly think he's allowing a recession to happen, the stock market to drop, so that it returns to normal valuations. Why? So that the average retail investor, which is basically anyone in the bottom 90%, the retail investor can get in and buy stocks at reasonable valuations instead of these overblown valuations.
Right. I apologize. Just for the audience, right now, the top 10% control or own 88% of equities, in other words, the stock market. So what G is saying, a reset allows that door to open up for others. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. So then, you know, if the retail investor jumps in right now, which I will say they have been, they're going to lose their shirt.
Okay, G, I apologize. Yeah. Just to keep you from getting too wonky, when you say the retail investor, who is that in layman terms, the average Joe?
Basically, the bottom 90%, right?
Okay.
The bottom 90% going, oh, look, everyone's getting rich in the stock market. Let me go buy. Like the shoeshine boy of the 1920s, right?
Hell, that's
oh, the shoeshine boy giving me a stock tip. The top 10% start selling because they realize the shoeshine boy is starting to buy. So that's what's been happening the last few years. I think right now the stock market is dropping because the institutions, basically the top 10%, are realizing, wait a minute, we don't want to be in this. We don't want to be in this. And I actually got a message yesterday from a guy who's kind of a real amateur. And he goes, is this the time to get in? It looks like we really dropped. And I'm sitting there going, we've dropped to the level in August of 2024. I mean, we've reversed 6 months. I mean, we've got to drop by 50% to get to a reasonable valuation. So,
so you're saying it's going to drop even more?
I think, I mean, to be a reasonable, like historical stock market valuation is about 50% lower than what we were last week. So maybe the Dow is around 20 to 25,000, which right now it's around 38,000.
That's a massive – see, that's recession talk there. Yeah.
Right. But that will be recessionary because everyone who's bought
it – hold
on,
G. One question. Yep. The stock market, so I don't have a chart, but tends to go up like this. It goes up like this.
Right.
Now, granted, it's going up like this. I mean, that's a. I'm not a stock market. I have a financial planner who I go to, but I do understand the basic gist. Do you really think it would drop that low? I mean, I'm looking at it 30,000. I'm thinking maybe 32 would be, because you don't think a new baseline has been set, but you think it's being down to 25?
Okay, so...
I mean, I don't know. I'm asking. I'm not...
No, I love this kind of talk, because in 1929 in August, Irving Fisher said we've reached a permanently high plateau of stock prices, meaning, okay, the old valuation metrics don't matter, right? So we've just kind of up here now.
Yeah.
So anyone can feel comfortable buying. We're paying these multiples, right? So what happened after that? The stock market dropped 90%. And that was the Great Depression.
Put that hand back up like you had it. You see the top of the hand? Just imagine hundreds of people jumping off that to their death, because that's what happened when the 1929 crash happened.
Right. Yeah. So and let me get a little bit wonkish, because I need to prove what I'm saying, right? So let's say a company like McDonald's, right? It's a restaurant. Not very hard what they're doing. It's not very innovative. You usually pay about a 15 multiple, right? So if it earns a dollar. You say, okay, I'm willing to pay $15 to buy a share because it earns a dollar, right? Right now, McDonald's is at 27. So if it earns a dollar, you go, okay, I'm willing to pay $27 a share.
Holy mackerel, that's high.
If you invert that, right, earnings over price, 1 over 15, it gives you a percentage. That kind of gives you a return on your money, right? So you say, okay, 1 over 15 is around 8%, right? 1 over 25... you're looking at 4%. Well, yeah. I can just buy a U.S. bond for 10-year for 4.5%, or maybe right now it's 4%. But the bond won't go down in value if I hold it all the way to the end, right? So I earned the 4% on it versus McDonald's. I earned 4%, but the stock could drop by 50%. Mm-hmm. So, and I apologize for getting wonkish on our listeners, but it kind of gives you an idea of, okay, well, okay, if McDonald's at 25, what does that mean? It could drop by 35%,
so
right?
In layman terms, you're saying the risk is greater there than it right. is elsewhere. And so what does that mean for the person to bring your wonkiness into layman terms?
Right. So what that means is, I think Trump sees that and says, okay, well, if we have a washout of all the excesses in the economy and we drop everything down, then it will be good for us in the long term. It's like resetting, right? It's like, let's say – you've been eating desserts and you don't really eat vegetables. And, you know, you go, okay, I need to detox. So for about 2 weeks, I just need to eat vegetables, you know, fruit juice, low amounts of sugar, fruit juice, and maybe some meat. And that's not what I like to eat, but, you know, I like cake, but I need to go on this diet, right? That's what we need to do. And, you know, we can get into the refinancing of the U.S. government debt at some later time in this
show. Oh, gotcha, gotcha. Yeah. Okay, so in essence, though, just to let the audience know, Trump doesn't want to do any of that. He doesn't want to bring any pain, but that's just the reality of how life works.
You have to.
And that's why he's saying it. He's completely downplaying it. There's going to be short-term pain, and that's what G's talking about. So to the audience, though, getting back to what worked is Trump understands – the most difficult thing for a prideful man, whether it's G, myself, or anybody, is to have to go to a food bank, to have to go to a thrift store. The working class wants real jobs. They want their kids to do better. I'm sure G wants his kids to do much better than he's doing right now. They want their own house, despite the fact that society's trying to teach you, you don't really want a house. Most people want their own house. They want less debt. They want a 9 out of 10, they're stressing groceries. 8 out of 10 want a home. The $3.3 trillion owned. 63% of Americans are renters. This is what the Democrat Party is pushing when they want to subsidize you with pennies on the dollar, so you can barely sustain yourself. Versus us conservatives, who we want you to be and do as well as anybody else. But there are certain pains we're going to have to go through because of where our country is at right now. So then after G's fear-mongering there, damn him, did Trump deliver? Trump's betting he'll deliver by 2029. Tariffs, tax cuts for 2.8 million jobs, $728 billion growth. He says we'll be rich again. Now, I'm not saying this is going to be true, but here's my conclusion off of this segment is – tariffs didn't flop, and since the prices barely moved, the workers won with wages and jobs. As I said, the working class, get that through your heads, people. The working class, the average Joe, those of us who were renting were able to afford to get, hey, honey, we can save enough now to put that down payment. We're in California. Okay, that's a fantasy. But if we move to Texas, we can, you know, and that I'm being real there by saying something like that because that's what happened. You know, the hourly worker, they beat their bosses. Maybe their boss was worth $5 million and the hourly worker was still worth $50,000, but he was worth $30,000 before Trump took over. You know, so the bottom half actually did better than the rich in the proportion or percentage. And that means a lot because that hadn't happened, I think, in my lifetime. I could be wrong, but that's how far back you'd have to go. So Trump's dumping the old pity vibe, meaning the Democrats, we'll give you a few pennies here, but you're going to stay poor. He calls the current system trash because he also wants us to have jobs, homes, and debt relief by 2029. Gee, before you get the comments and we close this segment out, I have come to truly believe Trump is one of the few elitists who actually does care about America and the people. Now, it's easy for the TDSers and those who hate him to say, no. But he not only relates to us, he kind of delivered for us too. And when he talks, I think he actually cares. You know, he has helped. He's done a lot of philanthropical work. He's helped a lot of blacks. And I say that because they say he's racist. He's helped a lot of Latinos. He's helped a lot of Americans as well. But he also teaches hard lessons of the reality of life. And have I got him pegged wrong? Because I do think he's a narcissist. Don't get me wrong. You know?
No, I agree with you. He is a narcissist. He wants a great legacy. He wants to be viewed as the most consequential president since Reagan, maybe since FDR. At the same time, he cares about the country. I think he's been talking like this since the 1980s. As far as I can go back, and whenever he talks politics, he's been saying the same exact thing. He's not changed his tune. I think he really believes this is the right way to go. And again, some of these obscene, you know, tariffs that he's putting out there, negotiating tactic. If these tariffs really went into place and the other countries retaliated, we will be hurting, but the whole world will be hurting a lot worse. So we'll be the ones coming out better than everyone. But I don't believe that's the way it's going to go. And I think Trump learned from his first term. He placed the tariffs in place and then realized not much change. I mean, some did change, but not much change in terms of how it affected China. So let's bring them to their knees. And that's what he's doing. And then he's looking at Canada and Mexico, realizing they're doing it too. So,
and we're going to get into that in detail next segment there. So I'm going to hold off on you there. We're good. Real quick, one more additional note. The auto manufacturing industry was the backbone of America. Maybe not necessarily the backbone, but it was a big part of the backbone of America. So he is fudging it there. He's keeping a separate 25% tariff on foreign automobiles. He highlighted that, and that's reinforcing his focus on protecting U.S. manufacturing that's still here. It's one of the big U.S. manufacturing industries that are still here in America. So the administration's approach, that does contrast with decades of trade liberalization. And that's signaling a major shift in U.S. economic policy.
Well, people are going to be like, ooh, wow, you can afford a Toyota.
Well, not Toyota, but a Ford. You can afford a Ford with the 25%. And that's key. You know, for the audience, this is probably not politically correct, but we used to call them rice burners growing up because they were from Japan, and they just flooded the market in the 70s. They took over and they were swift. They understood the gas price. They understood everything. And with the tariffs being so low, they overtook American manufacturing. And yet, America's doors were still closed around the world. So without the American market, that's why one reason Chrysler went under. Now, in defense of the transparency, they were still building big, heavy cars that were gas guzzlers. They were out of touch with America, thinking they could dictate America when America wanted cars that were efficient. But the bottom line is, the reason American car manufacturing lost their dominance was because of tariffs. Had our tariffs been protective as it was around, I'm not saying this is right, but had as it is around the world, we'd still be driving more American cars. Now, that's not saying that would have been good, because, as I said, American manufacturers were trying to give us what we didn't want. So there is yin and yang there. But at the end of the day, we should have done a better job to protect that American industry. And I think that's what Trump sees. He sees American manufacturing, the car, as a symbol of America. It needs to change and catch up with the times, G. But I kind of agree with his sentiment, not necessarily exactly what he's doing. But I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Your thoughts on the car before we move to tariff details. And guys, this is a long episode because we are breaking down a lot of segments for you guys.
No, I recently bought an American, or leased an American car. And
Tesla?
No. GMC. Although for my son, I might get a Tesla 3. But I think American made should be a highlight for our country, right? And right now it's like, oh, well, Toyotas are, and Japanese cars are reliable, while European cars, they're desirable. So, why can't we do that here in America? I think some of the union negotiations are excessive, and there's not a lot of profit margin for the car companies because their labor costs are so high. So if we could get some control over that, I think that's part of the problem as well. But American-made should be desirable, right? Cadillac is probably about the only one I can think of right now that's a luxury brand that's desirable.
Yeah, but Cadillac is owned, I guess, think by somebody else. By they were part of Chrysler, I think, at one point, or GM.
Yeah,
they were sold
Stellantis
off, if
now.
I remember correct. Somebody.
No, it's GMC. The GMC owns
is
Cadillac.
Is it GMC?
Now.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. So let's get into some of these tariff details. I'm going to pull up a chart, and I apologize to where I got this. The charts are everywhere in different formats, but somebody had it in a great cut and paste that fit my spreadsheet. So I apologize. This isn't a fancy graphic, but I think just to give you an idea here, let me share my screen here. So the universal 10%, as I keep repeating, applies to all foreign imports without exception. Reciprocal tariffs vary by country, and that reflects their specific trade surpluses with the U.S. or barriers. Now, in this chart, can you see this chart pretty well? Do I need to make it bigger?
No, it's a little bigger.
Okay. Ooh, I can make it lots bigger. Ooh, because I got lots of room to play. All right, so tariffs charged to the USA. Now, this is a formula Trump created. There's a lot of debate on the formula. So, for example, on China, China's not charging the 67%, but the formula obviously took into account all the red tape, all the fees, took into account the difficulties. It makes it to the point we don't sell anything over there because they purposely make it difficult. Japan does this as well. So the tariffs charged to the USA, 67%. This is the USA discounted reciprocal tariffs, 34%. European Union, they're charging the USA 39%. We're only charging some of their products 20%. Vietnam, 90%. This is slave labor in Vietnam. Not all of it, but there is slave labor that Nike has profited off of. Oprah has profited off of. Now, I'm saying this allegedly, but these are claims that have been made against these rich corporations because it's legal. And in their minds, well, it's legal. It's not on us. And most of America doesn't know this. But that's a 90%. So these are extremely high. Your thoughts when you see this 90% tariffs, 64, 46, 52, 72 from Thailand, 61, 64, 97% from Cambodia, 60% from South Africa. That's changing because they're not producing much right now. 74% from Bangladesh, 58% Pakistan. Where's India? Have I passed India anywhere? India, 52%. They're another one that Trump wants to target. Australia's only 10%, so they're good buddies there, even though I think they're idiots over there taking our guns, beating people, quarantining. Policy-wise, they're high Hitler over there right now. They are. I'm sorry, that's my take. 93% Madagascar. No, not Madagascar. They're one of my Disney favorite movies. 88% Myanmar. Now, y'all are saying, William, what are you talking about? I never heard of those countries. Look on your T-shirts. Those $10 jobbers you sit there and buy for your kid to run around, rip up, and they don't last but a year tops. That's where they're made at, These countries. 55% Kazakhstan. So I'm going down. 95% Laos. Again, think your t-shirts, your cheap athletic gear. 81% Syria. I don't know what the hell they make in Syria, but 44% Vanuatu. I got to be honest with you, I never heard of that country until just now. Look at this, 99% St. Pierre and Miquelon. Now, St. Pierre isn't being saintly, there is he. 59% Nauru. And people, this is an education. These are real countries. You know? 59% Algeria. That used to be French owned. I know that through the movies. Lesotho. Good old Lesotho. How many of you had heard of Lesotho before this? 80% Mauritius. 73%, 76%, 42%, 47%, 65% North Macedonia. Those damn Macedonians. What the hell happened to Alexander the Greek? Should have taken him. Oh, he was Macedonian. His daddy was. I got my history backwards here. 61. Look at this. Angola, 63. I'm almost done here. I'm just 82%. Not the Falkland Islands. Those damn sheep are giving it to us. You know? Falkland Island from the Falkland Island Wars with the Brits in the 80s. Margaret Thatcher, her big war. She was the Iron Maiden. But that war didn't do much to cement Iron Maiden status. And Reunion. You want to go to Reunion Island? Well, first of all, watch out for the bull sharks. They're one of the highest thresholds in shark attacks. But 73%, they're French territory. But, gee, any thoughts on some of these? And then look at ours. Okay. And again, this is a long episode. We just want to break this down to you. Show it to you in black and white. 34, yep. 20, 46. These are the reciprocal tariffs. 46, 49. We're still not matching what they're doing, gee. 44. Look at Sri Lanka. 88% are reciprocals. 44%. So 47% to the 93%. So we're still literally down. Laos, 95% to 48%. It's still literally a 2-to-1 ratio here. Your thoughts on this chart here?
Well, that's pretty much every country in the world except Sentinel Island, where they kill people who try to approach. Remember the missionary who went to the island and they killed him?
That was Sentinel Island. They had quite the sentinels there manning that island, huh?
No. I mean, they're really primitive, but that's basically every other country in the world. So what strikes me is that it seems like
Do you want me to keep the chart up for you? Do you want to point anything out? Are you okay?
No. Let's keep it up for a bit. Okay. So I think that every country out there has some base tariff level, right? So we just instituted the 10%. I think they also, pretty much every country, that's my takeaway, charges tariffs across the board, right? So most of these are at least 10%, and that's their zero is 10%. So we had 0% all this time. And I mean, I think maybe the 10% is fine. I mean, that seems to be the normal way of conducting business.
Hold on, G. See, G said earlier, and G is well versed, but even now he's realizing, okay, maybe Trump's 10% baseline. Well, he was questioning that at first, right. But then when you show the chart, and that's our whole purpose, it's like, oh, well, maybe that's why he's doing it. So it's one, right. I'm not trying to demean G. I apologize if it's coming across that way. That's why I wanted to do this episode. I wanted to show the people in black and white. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I always maintain an open mind. I'm not like a blind, a person who's like everything Trump does is great or whatnot. Even a conservative person, I'm as a conservative person, I'm not that way. But what I will say is that, okay, it does make sense that all these countries are charging a tariff because they're trying to gain revenue to provide services for their citizens. Now, the way the United States does that is we basically tax our own citizens to provide our own services. But now if you can offset some of that, lower our tax rate and charge tariffs, right, let's say 10%, and maybe this is going to be our minimum. That is non-negotiable. Well, now you can lower our tax rates, and now we have more money to afford the higher prices that come in by the tariffs. So I think maybe that's my one takeaway. But two, like, okay, so when you talk about Mauritius on line 110 there, like 80%, Lesotho, didn't Trump make a joke about them? The State of the Union, like,
yes. I don't know if he made a joke, but the reason I highlighted Lesotho, that's the highest tariff, reciprocal tariffs we have, is Lesotho.
Right. But even Vietnam was that line 4? They were at 90%. They've come back and said, look, we want to negotiate, and I believe they are willing to completely drop tariffs, 0%.
Right. Okay, and so let's get into a reality check first. Right, let's get into a reality check, the negative side of it. So the 2018 China tariffs, over time a 10% tariff bumps our prices about 6% up. We do get dinged. But at the end of the day, we still have, because of the tax breaks, we were still doing better. And we were generating revenue. I apologize. I hate using that term. We were generating taxes from our income taxes we were paid at a lesser volume. But it was the government was still bringing in more taxes because of the tariffs. We did see an increase in our daily costs, but it was offset, which is the whole purpose of China's plan. 10%, we ate 6%, China ate 4%. This is over time. This was an MIT study done in 2021. It's not the full pain that libertarians, Green Party, Democrats, progressives, and establishment rhinos are claiming simply because they don't believe in tariffs or they hate Trump. They don't even know. They're just spouting nonsense because they're not being truthful. If they want to have this discussion, by all means. But this is the truth. We're going to get hit, but they eat it. So again, the early impact is his tariffs hike prices about less than 1% on steel. That's one item, and I want to point that out. It was an example. That's why I said eventually we're going to hit 6% because eggs, you know, grocery, things like that. So, and I want to mention something about the CBO. And Scott Bessent brings this up, and I bring this up too when one side always tries to use the CBO. CBOs are wrong 90% of the time because they're static. Think of a politician who's looking at, we're gonna put a big tax on cigarette. Then they do a budget 10 years out. And then come year four, while they're still in office, and some of these assembly members or state legislatures, they hold office for 12 years. So come year eight, they're panicking because they're in a budget deficit. They don't realize, oh man, half the population stopped smoking. So that tax rate is now way down because they used the starting number as the permanent number. So when you hear a number from CBO, they're doing the exact same thing. So their static math says $79 billion from 2018 tariffs. The real haul was actually $94 billion. And that came out in 2024. So they're off. And they always miss these long shots. So cash out, 2018 China tariffs bagged $94 billion total, $35 billion a year. That's for the Treasury. And the CBO's long-term number is $350. But, you know, they're guessing. So I wanted to point that out is we could have twisted that to CBOG saying $350 billion, you know, down the road. But the reality is $94 billion. I wish it had been more, $35 billion, but it helped offset the tax, lowering the taxes on us, the people. So it was a win-win. Your thoughts on that portion of the segment, the reality check?
No, I mean, I think, you know, making estimates like that is a fool's errand because there are just way too many factors. You can't just take a percentage and say, okay, well, this is how much we will get, which I think is what they do. But you have to take into account like supply and demand curves and, you know, the opportunity costs. Like if I can buy American, then I'm not going to buy Chinese. So now the demand for that will drop or maybe it will go up, right? But they say, well, the China good is still cheaper than the American good and it's about the same quality. So it's just too hard to make real estimates and that's why they're frequently wrong. But like you said, they've always underestimated the amount of money we bring in through these tariffs.
Correct. Exactly. So I took the chart down. Any final comments on that, G?
No.
All right. Oh, G, I apologize. Just ping me when G brought his own booze to the party. He has his own chart. So let me know when you want to talk about that, where it fits in the segment there. All right. So there are exemptions and there are special cases. So Canada and Mexico are exempt from most reciprocal tariffs under the USMCA, the US-Mexico-Canada Agreement. On a side note, this is where Trump gets himself in trouble. He'll say something, that's wrong. And then somebody go, well, you signed the USMCA. That's what it falls under, brother. So Trump's got to learn still. Dude, am I on the right foot here? No, boss, you can't talk about that one. But the point is, so some of these tariffs don't fall under the reciprocal tariffs, but they do face a separate 25% tariff on non-compliant exports except for Canada Energy. So in layman terms, and trust me, my research, I did a, it took much longer, G, because I had to figure out what is layman terms. So a non-compliant export in this context, it means goods from Canada or Mexico that don't follow the rules of the USMCA agreement. And the USMCA is a trade deal that says these countries can send stuff to the U.S., their products to the U.S., without extra fees if they meet certain conditions, like making sure a big chunk of that product is made in North America, not somewhere else. So if the goods don't meet those rules, say a car has too many parts made from China, they're non-compliant, and that can be taxed. So as an example, there's two examples I want to give because I'm not sure which one would fall under what they would do. They could either say, okay, that car has 90% of parts X are from China. We're going to put a 50% tariff on those parts X. Or they could just go, this car, because 90% of it was made via a China, we're going to put a 90%. So they can do that. And so while Canada and Mexico dodge the reciprocal tariffs Trump's hitting other countries with, they still get slapped with 25% tariffs on these rule-breaking excerpts. Exports. And the exception is Canada Energy, like oil and potash, that's a fertilizer ingredient, which only get the 10% universal tariff, even if they're non-compliant. I had no idea. I didn't deem it was important enough overall because it was a small segment as a research why. Maybe G knows, but I don't know. But it's overall, this is a way to keep them in line with the trade deal while still charging extra when they don't play by the book. And the point here, G, is that this reciprocal, this is not Trump being a bully. This is not Trump being an a-hole. This is not Trump trying to impose our American will in an unfair manner. This is, you guys are screwing us. We can play that game. And again, this comes back to getting them to the table. And a final comment on here is Heard Island and McDonald Islands. That's an Australian territory with no human inhabitants, they're subject to the base 10% base life tariff. The point is Trump's not forsaking anybody. What? You're a country? 10% tariff. In full transparency. Your thoughts on everything I just said here, G? Am I correct?
Well, I guess Sentinel Island does get a tariff.
Oh, yeah. But, okay. That's right. That's the primitive island that G's talking about. Those primitives, they're throwing those arrows or spears at us. 10% tariff on that spear if it comes over here or hits our boat. Your thoughts on the exemptions and special cases?
No, I believe that, you know, you can loopholes, right? So, okay. So China says, okay, well, now we'll just sell our parts to Canada or Mexico, they'll make that item and then they'll bring it across the border, which I think was the problem with NAFTA, right? NAFTA was, hey, you can move your factories over to Mexico and hire people for $2 an hour, and now all of our Americans lose their jobs. So, I hope Canada and Mexico come to the negotiating table because I believe, you know, we should have all the tariffs dropped to reasonable levels. Maybe that's zero. Maybe it's a little higher. But here's the thing about energy, right? Energy is multiplicative, right? So if you tariff energy, well, that feeds into everything, right? That's like an input cost that feeds into everything. So now you're really causing inflation, which is what happened during Biden's term. And Trump said it, when you have high energy prices, well, you got to drive everything. You got to run factories. You've got to drive the raw goods from one place to the other to get into the factories, to run the factories, which people are working and they're driving their cars. So it's a very geometrically growing input price or input cost, which drives the cost up of everything. So I think that's why Trump said, well, energy, we'll leave that at 10%. And I wish it was 0%.
Right, it's a powerful tool, and to show how powerful it is, some governor of one of the provinces or whatever his title is, the equivalent of a governor or mayor of a province over there, was trying to use that up in the Buffalo area, New York, and threatening. And then Trump went to Canada itself. Really, you do that, we're going to do this. And the bigwigs at Canada said, little man, shut your trap. And little man came out, I'm so sorry, I'm not going to do that. Of course, he didn't say it like that, but that's in essence what happened.
I think it's the governor of Ontario or
Ontario province. Okay, let's get into the economic context here. Okay, so let's get into the economic context of all of this. So let's start out with China. So the U.S., what Trump talks a lot about, G, is a trade surplus. So, for example, the U.S. trade deficit, we are in a trade deficit with China, and that was about $300 billion. The Chinese import $440 billion in Chinese products and services, and that's a 67% trade surplus for China. That's relative to what we're exporting to them. And so why is change needed? This is a Trump policy here, G, and I want to get your thoughts on this. So first of all, we got to go back to history, the 2020. COVID proved our supply lines suck. 80% of companies got jammed, meaning we were jammed. G just talked about how in energy, you know, that's what uses to fuel everything, get everything to its destination. Well, that was jammed up 80% because of COVID. No chips for cars. Companies took big hits. China owns, for example, 70% of rare earth materials. So think phone and missiles and metals. So everything from our civilian products to our military products were cut off. 90% of fancy chips, they were white. So we lost all that. And then we're speeding towards a money cliff. This is what the Trump admin is saying. So we learned from COVID. We got to fix that and shore that up. But they're also saying we're speeding towards a money cliff. Our debt's $36 trillion, up $1.2 trillion from last year. The spending is crazy. $1.9 trillion in 21, $1 trillion in 22. This is from the CBO. I just hammered them, and I'm using the CBO number. But the economy's shrinking. This is not debatable, people. We're down at a negative 1%. That's an Atlanta Fed. Stocks tanked $5 trillion this week. Well, granted, that was partially Trump, you know. But we are on a downward trend, and a crash of sorts is coming. The supply's a mess. China's got her goods and tech by the throat. The debt's piling up fast. The economy's wobbling. It's time to switch gears or bust. That is what Trump is stating. Your thoughts, G-Man?
So we're heading into hyperinflation if we have to pay 4 to 5% on our debt, right? So we need the interest rates to drop as quickly as possible. And I think that's another reason why Trump says, okay, well, you know, a lot of debt's coming due. We need to repay it this year in 2025. So let's tank the stock market. I think, again, it's intentional. And then people jump into treasuries, you know, U.S. government debt. They jump into that, which drives down interest rates.
For the audience. G is saying that because we're taught in Econ 101, he's talking bonds. That is traditionally seen as much safer, meaning you're safe by buying bonds. That's what G is saying. He wants to tank it so people move towards bonds, which is our debt, right?
Our debt. And then if we do have a recession, wring out the excess, right, the extremely wet towel, well, the Federal Reserve will drop their interest rates, which basically puts downward pressure on these bonds, U.S. bonds, which is how the government borrows. And so that will help us out because – in order to pay the interest, you have to issue more debt. The government has to issue more debt to pay the interest to the ones who are owners of the bonds. So this is going to be a really bad scenario if this continues, and I think Trump realizes that. So I've realized it for quite a while. I knew back when the last year of Bush, Obama's like, we're paying $256 billion in interest on our debt. Well, now it's like $1.7 trillion. So for the quick math, that's about eight times. And that's just an interest. The government gets nothing for that. It's just interest.
Exactly.
And a lot of it goes to China. A lot of it goes to Japan.
For the average Joe, that's like just paying the minimum on your credit card every month. And you wonder why you're going to be 20 years before that $800 dress you bought is an $8,000 dress. That you don't realize because, whoo, got the minimum out of the way. I'm good for this month. You don't realize you're going to be paying forever on it. And that's what G is saying here. All right, so G was saying, hey, man, we're a third of the way done. We got lots to do. But here's a big chunk we're going to condense. So, and that is the implementation and negotiation landscape. And this is what G's been waiting for. This is what he's been pining for. I was about to say an old sailor analogy here, but I got to keep it clean for the producers. So countries willing to negotiate. I'll let G get into the details from within the notes I created here because some of them are interesting or good to know, or maybe that's just me being anal. But Vietnam, Japan. Japan's one of the biggest culprits. So is Vietnam. Thailand, another of the bigger culprits. Notice, G, these align with what I was saying last segment in terms of showing that chart. Thailand, K, Canada. Now, Canada is a mixed bag. They're willing to negotiate, but they also want to play hardball. Mexico, India, Australia, which I find a little odd. They don't seem to be one of the worst offenders. Even Israel. You know, we sent you mother bleepers billions, and y'all got high tariffs on our stuff. Malaysia. I'm looking forward to having cheaper workout shirts. So your thoughts on the fact that on day one, and while the stock market crashed, when this came out, the stock market did bump up briefly because these companies came out. And we're going to talk about that nonsense here soon. Before I get your thoughts on that, some of the non-compliant countries like the European Union and China, they are talking retaliation. However, their primary response does lean toward countermeasures. Rather than negotiations, but we fully expect them to come to the negotiation table because we hold the leverage. You know, then there's others such as South Korea and the UK who are assessing. The bottom line on all this, the situation is fluid and additional countries will emerge that are willing to negotiate as more responses are documented in the coming, at this point, hours or days. Thoughts, G?
You got to put your spreadsheet back up because what I find funny is Australia, the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese criticized the 10% baseline tariff on April 2nd as not the act of a friend. So can we scroll down and see what Australia puts on us? Because if 10% is not the act of a friend, I want to see how much of a friend Australia is to us.
Okay, so Australia, let me do a search here, be much quicker.
Oh, there it is, line 22.
Oh.
10% on us.
Are even much quicker.
No, I was just, eyeballing.
Yeah, that's why I found it odd. That's why I said that seems odd.
So they just admitted they're not reciprocal.
I'm sorry?
They just admitted they're not acting as a friend either.
Yeah. So in essence, he said, well, you got us at 10%? We're going to get you at 10%. So technically, they're going to hit the hardest, 100% for 100%, you know? And that's what Trump is saying. This is the baseline. You want to negotiate with America? This is where it starts. Oh, no. This is the baseline. This is you want the pass go come in America? It starts at 10%. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, I believe so. And here's the thing. Like, I thought that American goods were too expensive, so why are they putting additional tariffs on them? That I don't even understand that. If it's already luxury good over there.
The raised revenue. That's
right.
Why.
Right. So it is to provide their citizens services, right? So, I think this negotiating tactic will work on most of these countries. I believe you didn't mention Argentina. What'd you say? They're a fascist country earlier?
But no, not
Argentina. They're coming to the table. Vietnam's coming to the table. I mean,
they're not even in here, G.
No, it's not. But this is Argentina's not?
No. But he just had a meeting with Javier Milei, and Javier Milei is for free free trade. So okay. they're probably going to be the model that some people will try to push, which I'm not sure how that'll work. But yeah, they're not in here. Let me do
so. What I think is going to happen is going to be a critical mass, right? Like at first, you got these few countries.
I'm sorry, G. There they are.
Okay, there it is, 10%. So that's not obscenely high. But what's going to happen is going to be a snowball effect, right? You have these smaller countries coming in saying, okay, we'll negotiate. But when you get one big country capitulate, I would guess that would be Canada first.
Oh, the domino
first.
Effect.
Yeah.
That's going to be China.
Canada will cause all these other countries. Maybe it will be Japan. Maybe Japan's already signaled that they want to come to the table. Then maybe they're the ones that causes the rest of the big countries to flip. Will China negotiate? I'm not sure that they will.
I think they will, and we'll talk about that here shortly. I do want to keep moving only because of the time frame. But Japan noted Japan's preference for talks over immediate retaliation. They are dependent on us. Here's the bottom line, people. Let me remove this chart here. But the bottom line is we have all the leverage. We are the economic power. The analysts always say this or that. We're losing the dominance and all that. Yes, we don't have the dominance we used to have. But at the end of the day, all these nations will come talk to us. I want to bring one thing up, G, because this is for, we are a service industry, service country, meaning we're not manufacturing anymore. We get our haircuts. We go to flea markets and little booths, people, little shops all over the country. Y'all are going to be hurting. That I'm not going to lie about. Why? There's something called the de minimis exception. That is over. And this is important because hairdressers, jewelry shops, places that sell knickknacks, like the little hats, the little shirts, the t-shirts, the little chain stuff. So this policy ends the de minimis exception for goods from China and Hong Kong. The easiest way I can say this, G, is, let me finish explaining it real quick. That's effective May 2nd. It's a big loophole for low value imports. The cheap stuff that costs $5 and they sell it to you for $15. So in simple terms, the de minimis exception is a rule that lets small, low value shipments, like stuff worth less than $800, come into the U.S. That's a package, meaning not one product, but just in general, the package, come into the U.S. without paying tariffs or going through a lot of customs paperwork. It's been a big deal for hairdressers and for jewelry stores that are within hair salons or places like that. Think Temu or Shine. They're no longer going to be able to come in with an extra fee. Gee, in my opinion, those are going to be the Americans who first feel it. Why do I know? My wife, she's getting her final shipments in. I first saw this a year ago. I'm like, what the hell is this big old beach ball orange trash bag filled with? And then she popped it up and all this plastic, stuff in plastic wrappings comes out and she's marking it, laying it out, putting it up. Because I help her at her shop, setting up shop. And I'm like, holy mackerel, look at the markup on this stuff. That's coming to an end. So, and I just wanted to say that because it's pretty important. That's a big, it's a small number, but it's a big, massive amount of little people, how they earn extra income. Your thoughts on something like that? That, I think, could turn people anti-Trump because that's when they're going to first realize, why is this so high up? Or why do I have to pay so much? Or why can't I order this anymore? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's going to be some of that. But Temu and Shine, I mean, people have ordered stuff and then they're like, oh, man, this is cheap garbage. I mean, it is literally disposable stuff. And they... whatever they advertise, like, oh, this is a knickknack that does this or that, and then you get it, and it's, like, made out of vinyl. And, you know, the battery compartment destructs within a week. Then people go, okay, I wasted my money on that, but it wasn't that much. So, yeah, they're going to get hit by that. I think if China, you know, comes to the negotiating table, maybe that gets rolled back, but I don't think it will. So... I think maybe there will be factories here that make it, but it's not, you know, it might be a little more expensive or a lot more expensive, but it should be higher quality, I would hope.
Right. So what G is saying is, by cheap, meaning you're paying a few bucks, so when it breaks in a week, you don't think anything of it because it's just a little knickknack you bought out of curiosity or whatever. But now on the flip side, they had like berets and stuff that women can wear and get long-term use. But just to let you know, G, again, we're digressing here briefly, but Temu has 292 million monthly active users. Active, meaning they order from it. And out of that 292, maybe G can do the math, 292 million monthly active users, 186 million are in the U.S. alone. The platform's gross, which it's called merchandise. That's what G said, the little knickknacks. Gross merchandise value reached 71 billion. In 2024, these trinkets and stuff, they're seen as discount e-commerce space. So it grew. That's going away, and I'm okay with that. It's a cheap product. It doesn't pay its fair share. I am into fair share across the board, but not like Democrats want it one way. Okay, so we digress there, and I apologize, but I thought that was important. Any final thoughts on the players who've come to the table or the trend? You said that what you think is once the first major player hits, then it's going to be a domino effect.
Yeah, and it's only the first week that these were announced. I think some will be stubborn all the way to after the day of inaction, which I believe is May 2nd. So after that, or maybe it's April something, after that, it will be after the pain that they undergo. They say, okay, well, maybe let's talk now. So,
exactly. Yeah. Okay, so what's the current strategy? Doge. I don't say Doge in my notes, but that's what I'm referring to. They're cutting fat from federal jobs because people are like saying, well, where are you going to get all these Americans here to do these new jobs and unleashing the private sector? There's no Americans who want to do that. Yeah, the lazy POSs say that, but there are plenty of Americans. But cutting fat from federal jobs, we're not as cold-hearted as a Democrat. Learn how to code. No, we're going to say go work in the factory. That's a real high-paying wage job right now, you know, because there's not a lot of them. So, and to give you an idea, when McDonald's was charged, or were on average, were paying their people working at a shift $7-$8 in South and North Dakota, they were paying $17-$25 supply and demand. There's going to be a high supply for factory jobs. It's not like the old days. These are going to be sophisticated. You're going to be working through a combination of AI, high technology. There are going to be cutting the fat from federal jobs will help put workers back in there. That's just one aspect. So Trump's pushing hard for that. It's going to wake up the private sector. The recession's been dragging since Biden. Gee, we were in two recessions during Biden's that they didn't call recessions. But by legal terms, if I remember, and I'm guessing, if I remember correctly, it was twice. So smaller government, bigger private punch, meaning the private economy's going to surge. So your thoughts on that before we kick into – well, let me just do this. So the implementation timeline, you're looking at possibly $50 to $100 billion in reciprocal tariffs by May 2nd, and that's based off a $260 billion annual projection, and that's by the Tax Foundation came out with that. Again, we're not spitting nonsense numbers. You may disagree with them, but these are projections. And that's going to ramp up even faster as 60 countries adjust and we start making deals. But here's the important part that the media has completely ignored. Foreign investment into these United States of America since Trump became 47. $3 trillion in investments. $3 trillion in investment. That means factories, production lines coming in here. And that was reported by Street Insider. It's been like people keep saying the $1.1 trillion. It's up to $3 trillion now. And all this could start breaking ground by the third quarter in 2025 if the Trump tax cuts land. And G can explain that better, but that's aligned with we may give tax breaks to these companies to bring over. It becomes a win-win. In essence, what Trump is saying, bring those $3 trillion here and tariffs won't affect you. And companies are going, give us those tax cuts, and we're there. We'll pledge this much, but you got to give us those tax cuts. Your take on all that before we go into the potential China trade war, because G says they won't capitulate. I say they will.
Yeah, at least not quickly. But if you have a foreign company, and I'll talk about it this way. So if you have a foreign company maybe based in Germany, and they say, okay, well, I want to sell to Americans, but now – I need to open up a factory to take advantage of the 15% corporate tax rate in America. They might just create a whole new company here, right? That's a LLC or something based in America, so they don't have to pay the tax rate in their country. Right. So now they're paying us 15% corporate tax rate, plus hiring Americans, creating goods here that don't need to be transported across the sea. And so I think that's a win-win for everyone. Now, I think the prices will be higher, but hopefully the quality of that would be better. But look, Toyota's doing that right now, right? So they have factories here in America. They're making those cars
for years
here.
Yeah.
Right. So I would imagine that if they made those cars in Japan and shipped them over, they would be higher in terms of cost for the American consumer than just building them here, which is what they've done. So I think that's what we're going to see a lot more of.
And, G, let's get political here real quick. Take number one I want from you. Why isn't the media talking this up? This seems like a big win for America. And two, they're going to build these factories in the South, not in the North, because of the unions and that. And that's important, meaning we are our own worst enemy with the greed of unions. And not the people who work hard, but the greed of the unions and what they demand becomes unrealistic. And thus, this is one reason manufacturing fled America. And then when it did return, it returned to the South. Tell us why. Tell us your first take, and then tell us why they came to the South.
Well, I'll do the second take. They came to the South because those are more right to work states, right? So it's more business friendly, which is what you want. I mean, you don't want a a business unfriendly policy that says, okay, well, you can't fire these people because, you know, like you said, it's human nature just to get lazier, produce less, get more comfortable, and you need to remain competitive. You need to fight that, right? That the companies that do really well are the ones who stay on their toes and work really hard. So, you know, I'm not going to denigrate unions as right now they're supporting Trump because they believe Trump's going to bring back manufacturing, which I believe he will. But in the end, like the unions also, I mean, it's just human nature. You want more you want to do less to get more, right?
No,
corporations
do
it. Governments do it. Unions do it.
Right. And I'm not denigrating unions, but let's be honest. When you're paying somebody $75 an hour and his job is just to sweep the plant floor in one area, that's nonsense. And that's why companies are like, we can't deal with this anymore. We're going to go overseas.
Right. Right. So, you know, it's high physical labor, but it's easy job and you're getting paid $75 an hour. Like, you know, maybe that's being facetious about that, but yeah, there's no incentive to say, no, I want to become the shift manager and then the operations manager and then the plant manager. Like there's no incentive. You're doing just fine where you're at. So of course, not everyone can be CEO, but you need to have incentive for people to want to aspire to something higher.
And going back to the first take, then why isn't the media touting this? This seems like to be a massive win not for America as a country, economically, and most importantly, for the working class that the mainstream media says that they love and want to protect, as do the Democrats. Yet none of them want to talk about this.
First of all, TDS in this country is high on the left, right? So you're talking about the media. Their TDS is off the charts. I mean, you look at that Oprah clip, and she was just like fawning over Donald Trump back then, but now it's like she has TDS, and so people have really switched. It's really amazing. So now the Democrats are the party of the neocons, the globalists, what was the other thing I was going to say? And now they're burning EVs, and one congressman is bragging about how he sold his Tesla and bought a gas guzzler. Meanwhile, conservatives are being protectionist, pro-American, pro-peace, not, you know, and more anti-war, although not protesting in the streets. And they're buying EVs, and I'm sitting there going, what? This is a total role reversal. TDS, I mean, Trump has hacked. I remember in 2016, they said Trump hacked the Republican Party, which was true. But now Trump has hacked the Democrat Party in the last year. It's amazing what I've seen. And I brought this up to a Democrat, and he's just like, it stunned him. He couldn't argue with me. He was like, you're right.
I think conservatives have always been everything you just said. I just think Democrats co-opted that. And the reason I say that is at our core, we're kind of common sense. Hey, if that works, okay, I'll bend to make it work. Whereas Democrats have kind of become more socialist, communistic, authoritarian, because their belief is that they're right. And a little preview here, the original topic today was going to be fanaticism. How by definition, that's what today's Tesla protesters, BLM movement, the Bernie shooter, it was fanaticism. I'm going to talk about that next week. But I don't think we've shifted as much as we've always been. Flexible. We want to do what's best. All right. So,
let me bring up two quick points here. Sure. to highlight that point. So I just bought an EV because it makes economic sense, right? And I'm saving money and I should say at least it. But in order to get people to on the left to do that earlier, they had to create a religion of we're destroying the earth, we're destroying the environment. So now it's a moral issue for them where it's a common sense issue. The second point I was going to make is
Just integrate there, but real quick, they threw that to the wayside with Tesla, didn't they?
They
care about the environment.
They did. But then the second one is with Ukraine, right? So Ukraine, I'm sitting there going, how do you win this thing? You got to be practical and say, okay, Russia gets that land and bring peace to the region. And the Democrats are saying, no, we fight to the end. We can't let Russia win. It's like, okay, again, it's more of a moral, religious type of thing. Where the conservatives are being, okay, well, what makes sense here? Because you're not pushing Putin out, and we don't want World War III, so we got to come to a negotiating table.
And I'm going to interject again. It's easy to say that when you're here fat, comfortable in your chair, and not on the actual streets of the front lines over there.
Right.
We are such hypocrites as a society, myself included at times. I'm the good hypocrite. All right, let's get into the trade war. Real quick, there's a 67% disparity, meaning 67% of China's goods come here versus what we export to them. It's called a trade imbalance. The U.S. imports, again, $440 billion from China. China imports $144 billion from us. So the reason I think they will capitulate is China leans on our market way more than we do theirs. 10% of their $4.3 trillion export economy, it's only 5% of our $2.8 trillion. China's got their own economic headaches. Again, I'm not saying this is as 100% guarantee, but as a stats guy, if I'm putting my bets down, which I don't gamble, people, but if I'm putting my money down, this is what I'm saying. They will capitulate. So again, they lean on our market way more. China's also got their own economic headaches. Their growth is crawling at 4.7%. Their housing market is tanking, and their jobs are thin. So they're leaning hard on their exports to stay afloat. Get what I'm trying to say? They are in the crapper. Their exports is what has them afloat right now, and we just said that's going to cost you more money. So the they also have debt. They own $800 billion of our debt, meaning we can't afford to try to hurt America here. We have a lot of their debt, you know. And granted, they saw this. So some years back, it was $1.1 trillion. So they started buying down their debt. So Trump's tariffs give us the upper hand to be like a mafia. Hey, we're going to protect you, you know. That's kind of the role Trump can play here. So we're pushing for balance, though. Well, we're trying to tell them, hey, look, we want more factories here in America, not everything over there, and we want Chinese to spend more on our goods. So we're trying to play that game. We can still be rivals, and I'm kind of repeating what Scott Bessent said here. We're still rivals militarily, economically, but this is a fair setup that means more U.S. jobs and your economy's not crumbling. It's a win-win. In a nutshell, our tariffs could eventually break them by triggering a domino effect that puts them into a long-term recession. That's me saying that just because of how the two sides, the teams are made up. G does not believe they're going to capitulate as easily. I believe that it's going to be sooner than later. I think their 34% was chest thumping, meaning we're going to do it too, but it's very hollow. Prove me wrong, G.
Well, okay, so after the first round of tariffs, and my friends are texting me with their TDS saying, look at what's happening. The shirt prices are going up in Costco. I went to Costco. Literally, I had the text in my hand. I'm like, let me look around because I'm still buying shirts, I mean, 2025 for $10, $12. I looked at the tag, made in Bangladesh, made in Vietnam, made in Thailand. I'm like, okay, Indonesia. All these countries have made in Vietnam. They've shifted their manufacturing out of China in order to avoid the tariffs. So I think what you're going to hear is a big sucking sound of, you know, those factories going out. I mean, Nike already moved to Vietnam. And so if Vietnam says, okay, 0%, look, Nike bucked the trend in the stock market this week, at least the last day on Friday. So I agree with you.
Yeah, see, what G is saying, China's risk is their factories could get gutted, and that means jobs, millions. In 2018, when the first tariffs went around, they lost 3.5 million jobs. And the reason I put these technical numbers, I'm not trying to be technical and sound important. This is important for you to know, so when when your TDS friend says, well, hold on, and this may be my first article I write. It's an 18-page notes, but I may convert it into an article. But they are betting, G, and I do believe this, their one saving factor is they're betting that Apple, Nike, not all of them is going to shift to India or Vietnam because that's millions to do that, and that does take time. So it's a chest puff. G's a superpower. Hey, we're superpower too. But it's also peanuts. Meaning we have greater worries with Canada and Mexico. So I think China makes the news because the perception all our factories are over there. But you just prove they're not. So there's a perception factor here. So I think the quicker we bring China down and bring them, I'm sorry, you bring them the heel. You know, you bring them the heel. And that means you got to remove that red tape. And this even helps Hollywood out. Hollywood makes like pennies on the dollar, which is contrary. They made like close to 50%, 30, 40, 40 some odd percent per dollar in American studios, 40, 50%. Because, you know, it's a theater showing the movies. So they got to split the cost. It's much higher in Europe. This would help even Democrats. But at the end of the day, G, I don't think we're sweating their market, which is $144 billion. That's small fry. In Canada, $350 billion. Mexico, $260 billion. The EU, $570 billion. So China's the loud problem, but not the deep one. Their gamble, their 34%, is just a jab at us. I think it's a defensive play to stall Trump, hoping to Trump his tariffs, his baseline tariffs, and his reciprocal tariffs. They don't slash the $440 billion we buy because they're going to be coming to the table and say, Senor Trump, I have Asian in me, but I can't speak with an Asian accent. Senor Trump, Senor Trump. This is a China from Panama. Senor Trump, no, we talk. And y'all who say I'm politically correct, go jump in a lake. I'm just having fun, like my freaking cousins have towards my American accent now. Gee, your thoughts on what I've added to this?
No, I believe Canada and Mexico are they're the biggest ones, right? But combined, they're the same as the EU. So I think you win over these three groups, right? So EU, it's a union of a bunch of countries, but European. We win them over. China, like you said, is small fry. So that's why you're right. They might capitulate, but they'll be one of the last to capitulate because they didn't capitulate the first time around. That's why I'm hesitant to say that they will this time around. But now we've enacted higher percentages on them that might be too much.
Well, here's why I think they'll capitulate, because I think Trump is going to go to them first. And here's why. Perception is reality. And if China capitulates, it's a 2-for-1 win. Now, it's the perception of, wow, that's China. All our factories, all this, holy mackerel. And two, they're our mortal enemy in the eyes of many. You know, so he got our enemy to buckle, you know. So, and that, by midterms, that's good campaign fodder. So now real quick, India and Japan are in the same boats, but Japan, I don't know if I had India on my list, but Japan said, no, we'll negotiate. Real quick, who is that comedian, G, long hair, has it looks like a mullet, big time famous supporter of Trump?
Oh, Brand? No, Russell.
No, not him. Long hair. Theo.
Theo. Okay.
There's one of the funniest skits. He's on Bobby Lee's show. Bobby Lee's Asian. He's Korean. He goes, Theo, so pretend to be my dad, and you're my father. What would you say? And he said it in a real Asian accent, Bobby. He's like, no, not that. He goes, I don't know what I'm supposed to say. Bobby, and you gotta see it. It's one of the most hilarious. It's like I'm with Patrick but David. I could watch that because I laugh every time. So they do it so funny. Theo Vaughn, I've come to enjoy him. He's actually funnier than I thought. All right. So you mentioned the EU. They're talking 20% tariff. Canada is talking 25% tariff. But don't we hold the leverage, G?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the money is over here, right? So. We'll hold the leverage. I mean, EU, those guys not ever gotten along. I mean, you're talking thousands of years of war. So they're going to band together and be EU strong. But that's not going to last long. I mean, you look at little countries like Greece, and they're going to say, no, I think we want to reduce our tariffs to have Americans buy our goods. I'm not sure what we buy from there other than olive oil.
And that's one of the biggest mafia crowded industries ever.
Could be, yeah.
No, it is. I read an article on that. Mafia.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, it's big. It's big.
Yeah, so I think EU, they'll try to band together, but I'm looking at UK. I mean, there's 10% tariffs on U.S. imports, so... You know, maybe that will just stay the way it is, but the EU itself, I mean, I think they will capitulate one by one. I mean, it's like picking off, you know, the weaker ones, and then the rest of them will follow suit.
Right. The UK was complaining about the tariffs, and Sergio, what's his name, Sergio Gorka? What's Gorka's name? He was on their TV. He goes, what are you complaining at? You're our allies. We only charge you 10%. Stop complaining. And they were just, they could not stand him because they're very pro idiots over there. Okay. Yeah. So this is Trump's long-term strategy, people. He wants to lift to 50%. Again, wages jumped 16% last time tariffs were enacted. He wants to do that again. Tariffs could haul in about $300 to $600 billion in a year. And that's based from the Tax Foundation, up $600 billion with extras. Now that's Navarro, a Trump, acolyte. So take that one with a grain of salt. But we did pull nearly $3 trillion in investments, as we stated. So they want to start big with the tariffs, then ease off with the new jobs, taxes, and lower deficits as we begin to build here. But here's the key. I was repeating myself there, but I think that's important to do that. But companies are key, is what Scott Bessent believes, and he's the U.S. Treasury Secretary. Slash regs. And last time they cut 25%, regulations, meaning things that are hampering companies from building. They want to ease building, making it easier to build. The USMCA shifted some of that building. They want to drop taxes to 21% tax rate. And they want to sell here, build here, and they believe tariffs forces. So Trump's shedding the Fed bloat right now. Think Doge. He's betting big on factory. The $3 trillion is real. That's not a guess. That's not a number put out of three out of thin air. That's what has been pledged. Your thoughts on this as their long-term strategies to get the bottom 50% to give the uplift us?
No, that absolutely makes sense. And I will say, just to talk about housing real quick, the reason why housing is so expensive is because of all the regulations. And they're not building as much, and people don't have money. So it's kind of a, you know, the residential housing side of this whole argument is, okay, let's make it cheaper to do things here, and then you won't have to pay the import tariffs. And I think that's a great long-term strategy, which is the exact opposite of what we've been doing for basically the past 50 years.
Correct. If not more. To give you guys an idea of disparity, this came straight from Scott Bessent's mouth, the Treasury. He brought up a stat that more Americans vacationed in Europe in 2024 than ever before in the history of our country. There was a passport boom, 24.5 million increase in 2023, and 38% of Americans are planning trips. That came from Deloitte. Is it Deloitte, Touche? Touche or whatever, Deloitte. And they say that's still on track. Now, he brought that up in air appeal. Oh, yeah, man, Americans, we're doing good. No, those are the elites. Food Bank, they smashed records in 2024. 47.4 million food insecurities in 2023. People had to go to the food bank. 75% of banks were swamped. These are working class people, not just homeless, not just poor. It's like they have to supplement their income, and so they don't buy the food, and they went to food banks. So that's, I agree with the G. That's not a great America. I loathe the class warfare because Democrats have abused it and created false narratives, but this is a clear case of the rich benefiting. 88% of the stock market is owned, meaning they're the most invested by the 10%, which is the rich. The 50%, we are in trillions in debt. Think credit card debt. This is what Trump's trying to turn around. This is when they were the campaigning, G, where America's like, I'm not feeling this. And yet Don Lemon was saying, no, economy's good. Yeah, if you're rich. Thoughts on that?
No, absolutely. I believe we've been in a recession since last June. So we're talking 10 months now. Recessions usually are called 9 to 12 months late. So maybe 6 to 12 months late. So we're not even on the 12-month mark. And I think people have been feeling it for a while. And it's not a, hey, we're in a depression type of deflation, bad economy. This is a, prices have gone up so much because of exactly that, the rich, right? It's, so if you look at the gap between the rich and the poor, and the wealth of the rich increased by the highest amount or the highest percentage in the last 4 years, between 21 and 24, during the time Biden said, I'm going to go after those rich people. So under Biden, they become even more rich. And part of that was the increase in the money supply. So where does, if you just throw a bunch of money out there, who does it funnel right back to? It's the rich. So they became richer at a higher percentage. at a higher rate than the lower 99%.
You're talking printing money. Is what you're talking about here?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like you print money.
That goes back
to
Obama. That went ballistic starting under Obama to protect Obama.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it happened under Trump 1 as well, and it's always going to happen under any
president. No, they did not print as much money as Trump. I think they hurt him. That was one of the issues.
That's true.
Y'all stopping this. They called it QE, whatever.
Right. But under Biden, it was on steroids. It was on nitro. And so the rich became extremely wealthy. Prices went up. And the people who were maybe making a little more, like let's say 10% more, but their prices went up by 25%, mm-hmm. Well, now they're 15% poorer.
Those are the people that Don LeMond. More. Those are the people that Don LeMond said, no, the economy's good. We're like,
right. Right.
Yeah. So right. To put in layman's terms,
you have millions in the bank.
Yeah. So the put in layman's terms, what the G-man is saying is, Trump could have continued this nonsense, and that meant issuing more debt. You know, meaning we go from 35 trillion to 36, 37 trillion. The printing of money to kind of get the economy on the surface looking good, but realizing that, hey, inflation is going to continually hit us. And as G said, okay, you got a 10% increase. Put out the goods and services you buy has a 20 to 40 to 70% increase. Biden, oh, look at all these jobs I created. Well, if they're government jobs, who's paying them? Got to raise taxes to pay more government jobs. And this would crash us again. Gee, I want your input on what I just said. Am I incorrect? Because a lot of this is me kind of like looking at it and going, huh. It looks to me that we're looking at another crash coming sooner than later if Trump would continue what Biden and Obama were doing. And my examples are 2007, 2008, $13 trillion loss from debt overload. That comes from the GAO in 2013. The .com, which I lived through that. I saw 70% of my competitors who did not manage their money well go under, which to me, I was happy. I'm not going to lie. I was like, ooh, and that we vaulted to become one of the top three companies in the industry. The .com, the Enron, $5 trillion stock dive, $63 billion fraud, fake highs. It was a hard fall. And that came in the SEC in 2002, has that data. Bankruptcy filings were hugely high. So the goal that Trump's trying to do is not only help his fellow American, but to stop this from happening. And again, inequality, I want to say once more, the top 10% own 85% of the stock market. The next 40% hold 11%. The bottom 50%, that's us, we get 0.4% in stocks we have invested in. Nearly $2 trillion in credit card debt, $1.7 trillion in credit card debt, $1.6 trillion in auto loans, 63% of us rent. And this is continuing on if we keep doing what Obama and Biden. And God bless my libertarian friends here at Grumblings Media here in San Diego. God bless my fundamentalist friends who don't quite understand this. They seem to be okay because of the fear-mongering with continuing on. Am I looking at this wrongly or I think I'm spot on? I don't want to say spot on, but I'm like, how else can you look at it?
No, and I will add that if you go back a year and all the job gains that we've had, if you back out all the federal government jobs, we were at a net job loss outside of the government. So it's the government jobs that were keeping us afloat. But it's not because we were raising taxes to pay for those jobs. We were borrowing from the future. So we're issuing more U.S. bonds, and that's inflationary because when you issue more bonds, then you have to pay more interest and you have to print more money to do all that. So that was a really bad trajectory we were on. Thank God that Elon Musk helped Trump with Doge to figure out where we can cut the fat. He's done way more than I thought we would do. I thought it would be a couple cuts here and there. Remember we had that conversation a few weeks back? Couple cuts here and there, and then we'll give up the effort. But no, it's continued, and it's still continuing to cut.
Right. And, G, we're almost done here. We got a couple of segments left here, but yeah. I don't want to dawdle on him too long. I believe in what Trump's doing from the perspective you got to give it a chance. Now, Trump, in full transparency, did a little bit of this his first. I mean, our debt rose faster than ever before under him, but he also brought economic the tariffs helped offset that a bit in terms of the interest in keeping inflation down and the wage increases household income increases. But nothing is 100% guaranteed. And I want to explain to the audience, people are trying to scare you by saying, no, Trump doesn't know what he's doing. He's just throwing darts at the board. He's just hoping. No, Trump is taking a calculated risk. He went through this in 2018 with the tariffs, $94 billion in the Treasury, 16% wage gains. He's not doing this in the blind. To give you some analogies, this is what business people do, and Trump is a businessman. When people, and I said this maybe off camera very early on, when people ask you what was part of my success in becoming one of the top fantasy sports companies in the country, I took calculated risk. My risk was not like throwing a dart. Holy mackerel, you got some cojones. Well, you mean, it was calculated. So I like to say they're as big as you think they are, but they're not as big because it was a calculated risk. Walmart. They secured their American side of things before they went global. Tesla waited till the Roadster batteries worked, you know, and they waited till they got the loans to make the start moving forward. Amazon hit 40% in book share before they go, we need to expand. Netflix built their streaming before they dropped their DVDs because the DVDs were still making money. Trump's 25 tariffs is built off his 2018 tariffs. Countries are already talking. So my conclusion in telling you this, nothing's guaranteed, but when it's calculated, it's not as crazy and is not, you shouldn't be fearful as the mainstream media tells you to be. Your thoughts on that, G?
No, you always stick with your bread and butter, right, base case, to ensure that, okay, if you can take a bigger risk, that at least you're not betting the farm. So I think that's what's happening right now. It's exactly – your examples are spot on.
Exactly. So and nothing's 100% guaranteed, you know. But being real about it, I'm not as scared with the odds because that fear-mongering is why I felt we needed to do this heavy-handed show and we need to counter that. So what's happening today? Well, not today. The show was going to be live-streamed last night in full transparency. Yesterday, the Dow tanked 2,200 points. You know, it closed around 40,000. G thinks this is being done not on purpose, but one of the side effects, Trump is okay with it. So the markets don't wait for bleep to hit the fan. They kind of try to figure out what's coming. And with stock market, it's always extreme, you know. So they're reacting to Trump's policy right now. Just for the audience, correct, G? Is that how they're looking at it?
No, the markets hate uncertainty, they hate chaos, and they're projecting what these tariff rates would do to the American economy. But again, we know that these tariff rates are not the actual tariff rates that we'll end up landing on because negotiations will still happen.
Exactly, and to put it in layman terms, not that G isn't, but in examples, think of investors see the tariffs jacking up the cost of your iPhones, clothes, car parts, and they're looking at profits will shrink. So companies like Apple, 90% China made, and Nike, Vietnam heavy, they got hammered, and they were reacting to what's going to happen to those companies, you know. So they view this as being we're in a fragile moment, you know. So is this the question, G, for the audience, is this legit or overblown? The markets are moving on expectations, as G said, not just results. It was the worst day since 2020. 4-5% drop then too. So this isn't fake. This is real. They're hyping up recession below 50%. So me stating 2,200 point drop isn't nothing happened. That's not quite true. So the drop is real. Tariffs are live. Retaliation's locked in. And markets are betting on paying ahead. And Democrats and TDSers and Libertarians, Green Party, Rhinos, they're all jumping on this to scare the hell out of you. My take why I wanted this segment is to talk a little bit about the overreaction. But gee, anything to digress in terms of what I just sat there and said based off your belief system and your financial background?
There's an overreaction as to what will happen with the tariffs. But as I mentioned before, when the stock market is this overvalued, it usually climbs a wall of worry. And this happened in 2007. It climbs and climbs and climbs beyond the ability of someone like me. I sold a lot of my stock in late 2023. So we're talking almost 18 months ago. And I watched it climb another 30%. And I sit there going, wait a minute. I thought this was overvalued then. Now it's way more overvalued. But when things drop, they drop. They say it's like it climbs a wall of worry, but it's an air pocket. Like you drop quickly because a lot of people just want to get out. And it's right. like musical chairs. Everyone keeps going around in a circle thinking, okay, when the music stops, I'll get a chair no matter what. But I'll keep doing it all the way to when I think the music is about to stop. But then most of them are too late and then they don't pull out in time. Yeah. So that's what we're seeing right now. I told my friend, like I mentioned earlier, he sent me a message. I said, don't buy for a while. Just stay on the sidelines. Wait for the Dow to go under 30,000. He's like, under 30,000?
That's what
I said,
saying.
Well, yeah, it was under 30,000 just 4 years ago. I mean, this is not a obscene level.
Oh, I mean, I just put it together. You're right. All the printing money, all that, the stock market. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I get it. See, I'm
yeah,
slow
so,
sometimes.
No, but if you just go back to normal level, the Dow could go to 20, 25,000, like I said earlier in the show. So I said, a saying that goes back 100 years, the market will stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. That yeah. applies on the upside, that applies on the downside. So
that's a good way to say it, solvent, because right now we're not solvent. We've been outside of Trump's 4 years since 2008, we have been printing trillions in money. You know, so that's why the inflation that Biden had was expected by literally everybody. You know, they didn't tell you that, but it was. Okay, so I do want to point this out. This is why I wanted this segment. The market's wrong a lot. It overreacts like a drama queen. You know, kind of like Scream. Remember that series Scream? Yeah. You know? So in 2018, Trump's first China tariffs, it sparked a 6% S&P drop. But by mid-2019, it was up 20%. Panic had faded, and the deals got hashed out. Brexit, 8% tank job in June of 2016. It rallied up to 15% 6 months later. The point is, worst-case scenarios, recession, trade wars, they often overshoot the reality. It's more political, trying to scare the hell out of you. You know, this is why I think Trump's doing this in a fast-paced mode. He's been fast with everything. Get this done now. Get the pain out of the way. Prep for midterms. Because I think if he gets the House and Senate with majorities that he can actually get things passed versus where it's at now, so the majorities, then watch out. So why it dropped now? Nothing's happened. But as G said, they're betting on what's coming. So there was a $2 trillion S&P wipeout happened this week. So that is real. But here's what I want to get to, G, is we know that it's going to change because countries are already coming to the table. Companies from those countries are already talking about building over here. So I think the market's overreacting. Renegotiations are going to flip things. It could flip it as quick as 500 to 1,000 points in a week. It's not that crazy if certain countries come through. But your thoughts before I move on to, is this real money?
Well, it is real value. I won't say it's real money. It's real value. I mean, you don't have money until you sell and someone's willing to pay you for that. But again, we're just back to August 2024 levels. So, you know, markets go up, markets
go down. I want you to comment on the fact of how the markets tanked before and doom and gloom, and it came back. Is that a scenario that you see happening here?
Yes, I do. And, you know, I've been waiting for the market to return to normal levels over 10 years now. So it could stay elevated to abnormal levels again in the next year or two. So that's absolutely possible.
Nothing's
but,
guaranteed.
You know, I'm not going to predict the markets.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
they are based
guaranteed.
On irrationality.
Yeah. Okay, so is this real money? The reason I bring this up is there's fear-mongering you. Oh, my friend. So, you know, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I was watching my 401k collapse. I'm like, oh, you're going to retire this week. Because if you're not going to retire this week, then you're just – your TDS is what I'm hearing. You know, I'm not hearing a realistic check here. You know, and the reason I bring this up is this is paper wealth. And that's even per Investopedia who came out and said this is paper wealth. And that means the value is shrinking, but it's not cash. So who feels this? This is who feels it. The rich are feeling this, not the working class. Why we have 0.04% in the market, you know? So a billionaire's $10 billion portfolio, it drops by $600 million. Most Americans, 55%, own no stock. But William, there's $7 trillion in retirement funds. That took a hit. Are you retiring today, this week? If you are, and you're counting on that money, then you got a bad freaking financial planner, because he should have been warning you about this. When you're at retirement age, you should be minimum or most one third of your wealth in the stock market. The rest should be in very, very conservative investments. Think bonds, as G talked about earlier. So, but yes, if you're retiring soon, it's not just a number. You know, but jobs are getting cut because of this, but they tend to be overseas jobs right now, because it's those countries being hit, and that's what's going to bring them to the table. We're not going to get hit early on. So I believe social media is overreaction. This is TDS. This is the mainstream media fear-mongering. For the average Joe, this is not a big deal right now. 70% of Americans, sadly, live paycheck to paycheck. You know, this is Wall Street's headache. So unless you're cashing out your 401k real soon, the $1.92 trillion is noise for most people and not real pain. Nine countries came the day of tariffs saying we're going to negotiate some of the countries with the highest tariffs. Today it's investor panic. It's not your rent bill. So what's next, G?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot more pain ahead. The market's going to be turbulent, and you know, it's funny that you said that. You know, it's the top people who basically feel this. So I watched Jesse Waters yesterday, and he told Victor Davis Hanson, both, you know, very wealthy people, like, don't look at your portfolio. Just go enjoy the weekend, hit the beach. And that's exactly right. When you see values drop like that, it affects you twice as much as the gain. So, for example, if you lose a dollar, you're more likely to panic than you're to be happy if you gain the dollar. People right. are more risk averse and more pain averse. So, you know, for those who own stocks, I say, you know, basically just go enjoy the weekend and actually go enjoy the next 6 months and say, I'll come back to the portfolio back at that point. But for those who are not in the market, don't get in the market right now. This is going to be a wild ride for quite a while.
It's going to be a correction, and that's what they're not telling you. They're trying to scare you. And you can darn well bet right now Trump's people said, you're not going home, or make sure your mobile is on, because we can start negotiations at a moment's notice with some of these countries. Because Trump is like that. Okay, you want to negotiate? Freeze the tariffs. I guarantee you the tariffs are probably frozen for these countries that said this talk. As long yep. as they start talking. And that's what you're going to start hearing over and over and over. So to everybody, we're going to break this show into segments. We went everywhere. We digressed. We had fun. We hope we put it into layman terms. And that was my goal. So you understand. And I want to break this up into segments. Our producer won't be happy hearing, what? I got to do 12 segments here? Yes, because it's going to be broken down in segments so you can understand every aspect of it. G, any final words before I close? And for those of you who tuned in, thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Oh, actually, we're not live streaming. So those of you who are going to watch this in one go, thank you. G, final words.
No, this is a major inflection point for our country. I think what happened in 2016 to 20 was a trial run, but this is a major inflection point. And we'll see if it's successful. I believe it will be, and a lot of others don't. But, you know, the globalization, the unchecked globalization of labor and economics has, I think, impoverished the bottom 50% of our country, and that's unfortunate. So hopefully, you know, our trade gets more freer, and as a result, a lot of jobs come back here.
I agree. And I assume my inflection point, you meant this is a big moment in our country right now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This
is like a Ronald Reagan type of moment. Ronald Reagan, FDR type of moment.
And, you know, I'm glad you bring that up. I'm going to close the show out, but damn it, you brought something up that triggered my memory in a good way. Ronald Reagan is immortalized for what he did with the economy. He took the 70% tax rates that most millionaires, it was more millionaires than billionaires, a handful of billionaires at that point in time, than they were paying. They were using the tax loopholes, they were using everything. We weren't getting the tax revenue. He blew up how the machine was working and changed it up. He believed in his supply side. The fear mongering was in there. And yet he immortalized himself by putting us on a path of greatness that George Bush kind of screwed up. But that said, that's Trump. Is a narcissist, but Trump wants to help us. But Trump is also smart enough to see this is his Reagan moment. If he can make this happen, he will be immortalized, because G is absolutely correct. 50% of the country is suffering. is suffering. All these people you hear talking on these shows, they're not part of that bottom 50%. They're in the top 10%. Even the producers working at these networks that are working class, they're in the top 30%, 20, 30% based on what they work. Union workers are in the top 30%. The everyday Joe is not. And that is who Trump is trying to help. Nothing is guaranteed, my friends, but you need to understand the bigger picture and not let the fear-mongering scare you. I hope this episode has helped you tremendously. And before I forget, you can find this podcast and others like it at grumblingsmedia.com. Bookmark it. grumblingsmedia.com. You can also find us, and if you're watching this, you're more than likely watching it on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, or Pandora. Those are under the handle Grumblings Media. Once again, we're going to chop this up into segments to help you out, but I think, gee, we did the job. We took everything and we broke it down into layman terms, and that was our goal. So, for G, oh, I was going to say G Mangani, but no. For the G-Man, I am William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up. And until next week, we bid you adieu.